Good evening, please. Take your seats.
Ready to go, Mr. Carney?
Yes, sir.
Ready?
Okay, good evening. It's Tuesday, February 14th. The time is 6:05. Please turn off your cell phones or turn them down to vibrate or silent. This is the Champaign County Board Committee of the Whole for Finance, Justice, and Policy. Roll call, please.
Carter.
Here.
Cohort. Esri.
Here.
Holderfield.
Here.
James.
Here.
Jay.
Here.
Kurtz.
Here.
Langenheim.
Here.
Maxwell. McGinty.
Here.
Michaels.
Here.
Mosier. O'Connor.
Here.
Petrie.
Here.
Quisenberry.
Here.
Richards.
Here.
Rosales. Schrader.
Here.
Okay. Weibel.
Here.
Alex.
Here.
Ammons.
Here.
Anderson.
Here.
Finzel. Berkson.
Here.
Bett.
Here.
We have a quorum. Mr. Benzel and Mr. Maxwell previously informed me they would not be able to make the meeting tonight. Seek approval of the minutes for the Committee of the Whole for January 17, 2012.
So
moved. Moved by Mr. James, second by Mr. Esri. Discussion. See none, all in favor? Oh, sorry, Ms. B. Yeah, no, we're on the minutes.
Oh,
I
didn't
have a question yet.
I'm
sorry.
Microphone, please.
Sorry. Recorder of the minute.
What page are you talking on?
I just wonder when I get in there. Page 1, under approval of the minutes, line 38. And following lines in that paragraph, there was a question about Anderson's vote, and I wondered, was that checked on? And there was
Kay checked on that, and the minutes are correct.
Thank you very much.
Right? Mm-hmm. Okay, further questions? Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Motion carries. Seek approval of the agenda and the addenda. Moved by Ms. Cohort, second by Mr. Carter. I'll point out that we're going to remove item 92A. That's an MTD appointment because I got the applications in very late. Also, we need to add a treasurer's report under finance. And let's see, we want to put that because it's inadvertently left out, but it's not an action item, it's just a report. So we can add that without causing a problem, I think. Where do you want to put that? After the auditor? So that would be between the auditor and between G and H, so G and a half. Any other changes to the agenda? Okay, see none. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Public participation. If you want to talk through public participation, please fill out one of these forms. It's back over there. And give it to me. Give it to me while people are talking. You have maximum 5 minutes per person, but we have to get all done within 1 hour. And, of course, the county board cannot interact with you. And this, tonight I'll start from the bottom of the pile. And that first person is Kevin Sandifer.
Good evening. My name is Kevin Sandifer. I live in Royal. Those of you who have known me for a long time know that on those rare occasions when I speak in public, I usually don't work from prepared remarks. I generally find that I'm more effective when I speak directly from the heart. But the issue I want to talk about tonight is important enough that I want to make sure that what I have to tell you is perfectly clear and not misunderstood. So if you'll indulge me, I'm going to be reading parts of my remarks. I'm currently a candidate for the Democratic nomination for county auditor. Most of you already know that. As a result, I have a direct personal interest in the discussion you're going to be having later tonight on the salaries of our elected county officials. Something else I don't have to tell you is that we are still living in a time of relative economic uncertainty. We've lately seen some signs, both nationally and locally, that things may be improving, but we obviously still have a long way to go. This uncertainty, I also don't have to tell you, has been made worse in our county by a general decline in property values over the last several years, as well as by the continuing disaster on the state level, which over the last several years has resulted in record deficits and an ongoing delay in state payments to all levels of government. Of course, we all hope that things are going to get better, and I expect that they probably will eventually. But there's no way to know for sure how long it's going to take for this situation to improve. That's why I'm here tonight to ask for both caution and conservatism in the consideration of salaries for elected officials. I believe that it is probably too soon to start spending new money before we have any guarantee that there will actually be any new money. Our county administrator and the various department heads have done an outstanding job in recent years reining in the county budget and trimming our spending as conditions have required. And I would very much hate to see us undermine their efforts by moving too quickly to increase any portion of our county budget. Now, I also realize that the dollar amounts involved here are relatively small compared to the overall budget, but I think it sends entirely the wrong message to increase official salaries in light of the continued uncertainty. Last thing I want to see, God forbid, we should somewhere down the road need to come back and ask our county employees for any further cutbacks or sacrifices after having raised the salaries of those at the top. I honestly just do not see how we could possibly justify that. But I also recognize that there is a desire for parity in salaries between our elected officials who have roughly similar workloads and responsibilities. That's perfectly understandable, and I think it's perfectly fair to try and do that. I would point out, however, that increases are not the only way to achieve this parity. That's why I'm taking the additional step this evening of asking tonight that this county board give serious consideration during your discussion to the possibility of actually reducing slightly the salaries of the county auditor, coroner, and recorder in order to bring them back into line with the currently lower salaries of our county clerk and treasurer. This is my personal opinion, and I think that such a reduction in salary, and I realize we're not talking about a whole lot of money here. It's roughly $3,000 per year per official. But I think that the message that would send is much more important than the dollar amount. I think it would not only be more fiscally responsible, but it would send a clear message to the taxpayers that we take very seriously the responsibility of stewardship of their tax dollars. As always, thank you for your time and your consideration.
Belden Fields.
Hi, happy Valentine's Day. I want to address the issue that has been put on the agenda as the jail issue, but I think it's better to broaden the consideration to how we deal with criminal justice, just with the jail system. And I'm addressing particularly the Social Justice Committee that will be taking this up, but also the committee that's been appointed, was appointed last week. And what I would like to urge you to do is to consider four aspects of the question. One of them is detention, and I think it's important to, given the very diverse kinds of populations in terms of what people are in jail for, what the offense was, to consider not just building, if you are going to build in addition to the satellite, or if you're going to do something with the Main Street Jail, to think about the distinction between the maximum security institutions and lower security institutions. that people who are murderers or rapists ought not to be living in an institution or under the conditions that the people who have traffic offenses or people who cannot pay their ordinance fines or whatever are held in contempt because they can't do that. I think we need to differentiate the kind of facilities. And I think also we have to give some serious thought of something that was mentioned the time before last, I think, about how women are treated in the jails, particularly in regard to toilets, in regard to the use of tampons and such. I do not think that it is appropriate to have them visible to male guards. I think there ought to be females in there. And I've heard not only this raised in this jail, but a relative of mine who found herself in Sangamon County Jail was appalled at the way the male guards dealt with that situation that females face and used it in a way both to punish and to ridicule the people. So I think there has to be serious consideration to getting many more females in the staff that deal with female prisoners. Secondly, after detention, I think prevention is something that we ought to be concerned about. We don't want people to be turned into more hardened criminals as a result of their detention. We always we want to be thinking about, it seems to me, how to prevent recidivism. And also there are some other services that could be done. And I think that Our state's attorney has done some good programs, alternative programs, but I think more can be done. Rehabilitation, I think, is also something that we should think of, and establishing a relationship between rehabilitated services outside of the jail and what is going on in the jail. The third thing is treatment. I mean, it's a terrible situation that people have to stay in jail waiting for a bed in a mental health institution. And I was a bit chagrined when the two women who were here that apparently deal with mental health people said, we cannot give treatment. All we can do is get into crisis intervention. And what that means is that none of these people, while they're waiting for the beds in the mental institution, are getting any kind of treatment. And certainly we can do better than that. We can get some people on staff who are able to give some treatment to these people. They might not be psychiatrists, but there are other health professionals, mental health professionals. So I'm just asking for a broader vision as we go ahead, and not to just take, you know, a very, very narrow vision about what this enterprise could be. In a way, it presents an opportunity, and a positive opportunity if we treat it such. Thank you very much.
Stephen Ayers.
Good evening. I'm Steve Ayers, University of Illinois Extension Educator in Local Food Systems and Small Farms serving Champaign, Ford, Iroquois, and Vermilion counties. I assumed that role in July of 2010. I'm one of 13 local food systems educators throughout the state. In addition, we have extension specialists on the U of I campus and in the research centers. The program objectives for our local food systems and small farms educators are to develop business plans for new and transitional producers, increase locally grown food production, increase understanding of marketing and distribution, and improve food safety procedures for locally produced foods. Earlier this winter, a local foods group met with the Bloomington Edible Economy Steering Group. Their group is to create a local food hub for 32 counties in central Illinois. During this meeting, a grower suggested meeting with produce buyers to better understand what produce may be the best fit for both the grower and the marketplace. Our next local foods event will be a Meet the Buyers workshop for fruit and vegetable farmers on March 27th. The meeting is at the Champaign County Farm Bureau from 8:30 a.m. till 5 p.m. Champaign County Farm Bureau, and U of I Extension are sponsors of the event. In addition to education sessions, buyers from eight firms will provide an overview of their organizations and their procurement needs. Farmers will also have an opportunity for one-on-one visits with these buyers. U of I Extension's role is education, collaboration, and coordination. I support the Local Foods Council and would be willing to assist with the effort. Thank you.
Diane Marlin.
Good evening. My name is Diane Marlin, and I'm here to talk about the proposal for the Local Foods Policy Council. I support the creation of a Champaign County Local Foods Policy Council to help strengthen and grow the local food system in this area. I serve on the Urbana City Council and help draft the strategic plan for Urbana's Market at the Square. A countywide food policy council would help further the mission of the market and support future development of our farmers' market, but also helps support the farmers and the growers who depend upon that market. Local Foods Policy Council activities as described would be consistent with many of our own City Council Mayor goals related to environmental sustainability, improving accessibility and affordability of healthy foods, energy conservation, and intergovernmental cooperation. Urbana is also about to enroll in First Lady Michelle Obama's Let's Move Cities, Towns, and Counties initiative to promote active living and healthy eating. The countywide Local Foods Policy Council could complement our efforts to build healthier communities. And in general, the Policy Council has the potential to give stakeholders a voice in the food system and to encourage young farmers to participate in it. It has the ability to support small businesses and the growth of agritourism and to provide fresher, better-tasting foods to local schools, colleges and universities, restaurants, nursing homes, and correctional facilities. It could also support efforts to establish a regional food hub, which would aggregate and minimally process local foods. And finally, it would help guide policy decisions in that guide all aspects of the local food economy. So I strongly urge the county board to support this proposal.
Kathy Capel.
I'm Kathy Capel. I live on a small farm in Sydney, Illinois. I raise sheep and chickens on my farm. I also serve on the Zoning Board of Appeals in Champaign County. And I'm former director of farmer programming for the Land Connection, which is a nonprofit founded to preserve farmland. I have a letter in support of the Food Policy Council from the founder of the Land Connection, and she's also the current executive director, Tara Brockman, which I'll ask to have put into the record rather than read it to you. Food production for local markets and direct farm sales of food has increased significantly in the last few years. One of the indicators is the increase in the number of farmers' markets, which has gone from 1,700 in 1994 to 6,000 in 2010. And you can see the growth that Urbana's experienced at the market at the Square. At the request of the Edible Economy Project, which you've heard a little bit about from Steve Ayers in Bloomington, Ken Meter of Crossroads Resource Center in Minneapolis did an assessment of the potential economic benefits of developing a robust local food system in central Illinois. The Edible Economy Project is working to increase the percentage of Illinois-grown food eaten in Illinois. In partnership with local farmers, schools, businesses, and community members, Edible Economy is facilitating development of local food production and distribution processing facilities. Their goal is to foster a healthier, more self-sufficient community where more local money goes back into the local community. Ken's comment in a presentation in Bloomington was that our region has the opportunity to significantly boost economic development, create and retain wealth, and provide Illinois residents with greater access to fresh, affordable, locally produced food. Key points in his report and the presentation in Bloomington, farmers in the 32-county region that the edible economy is talking about in Illinois, and I'll put this with a map into the record, produce $4.8 billion in products per year, and they spend $4.3 billion to raise them, with a net gain of $464 million after production costs. All told, Central Illinois gains $464 million in ag production, $538 million in federal subsidies, but we lose $2.3 billion buying ag inputs and $3.9 billion buying food. The net loss to this region in terms of ag production and food is $5 billion. Ken feels that community-based food systems may be the best path to economic recovery. If our region's consumers bought 15% of their food directly from local farms, Central Illinois farmers would earn an additional $639 million in income, and we would be in the black instead of the red. The data for all of this is on, you know, it'll be in here, the links to the data, the links to the presentations. A local food system is a fairly complex model. There's lots of wiggly lines, and there are all kinds of stakeholders and people at all levels, and essentially at all, from commercial to people that have extra from their garden and that are selling in the Urbana farmers market. A local food council, I think, has the potential to have a broad enough base to represent all of these stakeholders, give all of these different people who are interested in producing and consuming a voice in developing policy. The council will provide a forum for a diverse array of food system stakeholders to develop food and agricultural policy recommendations. The composition includes farmers and growers. It includes academics from the university, representatives from the student farm, extension, and also end users from the local food retailers, restaurants, and even the food bank.
Your 5 minutes are up.
Okay. I'm done.
Didi Kambush?
Pardon?
Next person.
Oh. Here's this.
Good evening. My name is Aditi Kambush, and I'm a student.
Could you step up the mic a little closer?
An urban planning student at the University of Illinois and a member of Planners Network, the University of Illinois chapter. I'm here in support to sort of on behalf of Planners Network to support the Food Policy Council for Champaign County. Planners Network is a community organization that stands for progressive urban planning through equity and social justice. Food policy councils seek to address economic issues, including the diversification of local agricultural economy and the promotion of existing and new businesses. While these economic goals of a food policy council are undoubtedly important, they must be and typically are supported by several social justice goals, which we Planners Network support. I'd like to talk about three of these goals tonight, starting with the connection of underserved areas with healthy food choices. According to the U.S. Department of Agriculture, Champaign County has two food deserts where 2,000 residents are more than a mile away from a grocery store. And the reality is that for many members of our community, access to fresh and healthy produce is very limited, making healthy eating a difficult choice. For example, the nearest full-service grocery store to the North Randolph Street community is a mile and a half away, which is a 30-minute walk. Because these stores are not in close proximity and many underserved areas are transit-dependent, improved routes and services such as mobile food markets should be available to link residents to healthy food choices. This is one arena that a proposed food policy council can investigate and address. The second suggestion is organizing community gardens and farmers markets. The food policy council can easily facilitate options that serve low-access neighborhoods by enabling the organization of more community gardens and farmers markets. Community gardens and farmers markets provide an expensive way for people to grow and eat their own healthy food. Farmers markets also provide economic benefit. Together, they also create public urban spaces in which the community can come closer together. The American Community Garden Association also points to the benefits of neighborhood gardens that extend beyond the greater availability of nutritious food to crime reduction and resource preservation. Currently, Planners Network works in the North Randolph Street community to bring together youth, senior citizens, and community members in a community space where food is grown, skills are shared, and friendships are forged. The third is linking existing community-wide resources. The proposed Food Policy Council can be designed to be a resource pivot in a Champaign County food system, linking surplus food, knowledge, and skills to the people who need them, thereby eliminating wastage of precious fresh produce and optimizing the use of existing resources. Finally, to meet these social justice goals, Planners Network advocates that one Food Policy Council board member is a person from the community that currently works towards the issues of food security and social justice. In conclusion, I'd like to ask the Champaign County Board to recognize the critical need for a Food Policy Council. Thank you.
Lynn Branham.
Good evening. My name is Lynn Branham. I'm a resident of Champaign. I'm also a visiting professor of law at St. Louis University School of Law. My areas of expertise are correctional and sentencing law and policy. I've overseen the development of a Model Adult Community Corrections Act for the American Bar Association, worked on restorative justice-related projects, chaired a fiscal crisis task force for the American Bar Association to develop recommendations bearing on the most cost-effective corrections and sentencing systems, and done a number of other projects in these areas. I'm appearing before you today because most of my work is on the national level. There are some decisions being made in my backyard. I want to share just a few insights that I hope will be helpful to you. It appears from what I've read in the paper that you are moving in the direction of a bifurcated endeavor, part of which will focus on jail needs, the other part of which will focus on alternatives to incarceration and general criminal justice reforms. With all due respect, those two endeavors are inextricably linked. In other words, what you do in terms of jail construction and renovations will depend very much on facts that will be unearthed by, and I hope publicly disseminated by, the advisory committee. Let me give you a little feel for what I'm talking about. It's very important for both endeavors that basic data be collected and considered bearing on the jail population. What percentage of the inmates, for example, are pretrial detainees? The jails I've worked with, the majority are. What are the statistics on average length of stay? If we have a short length of stay, if there are assertions that's really promoting the public safety, those tend to be exaggerated. Are they long length of stays on average? If so, to what extent is that because people cannot post bail? There are a number of other data-related questions that will affect the decisions by both groups. Number two, what kinds of risk assessment instruments are being used by officials when making detention decisions, and are those instruments reliable? The Missouri Sentencing Advisory Commission has recently instituted a practice, got national attention, where they're funneling to judges information that seems counterintuitive to people who haven't worked a lot in the criminal justice system. A lot of times that data will reveal if you send somebody to prison, it will cost thousands of dollars more and actually have a higher recidivism risk. So what kinds of instruments are we using here, and do we need to get better instruments? Something to be considered by both groups. Do we have a pretrial services program in place, and is its utility being maximized? What kinds of other community sanctions are in place, and how can existing ones be adapted to maximize their cost effectiveness? Finally, I read in the paper, there have been some references to restorative justice. I have a passion for that. I recently written on the institution of what would be called restorative sentences. I can share those insights with either or both groups. I think my overarching recommendations are this. I understand you're going to bring in a consultant to assist the first group, looking at jail needs. If you're just going to bring in a consultant for that one group, I strongly recommend that you bring in a consultant, really a team with a wide range of expertise. If you bring in somebody who just has expertise in jail architecture, you are going to get a primitive needs assessment. I've seen these. What is needed is a data cruncher, looking at the data I just mentioned, somebody who knows risk assessment, somebody who knows pretrial services, community sanctions, and case processing. And number two, if there is the continued decision to go with both groups, work needs to be undertaken, a structure needs to be in place, with all respect, to make sure that the groups are working very closely together. I thank you for permitting me to tender these remarks to you.
Michael first.
Hi, my name is Michael First. I live in Urbana, and apparently we are required to have an elected auditor because of a referendum we had a year or so ago. However, we effectively have not had an elected auditor for the past 4 years. And our county has done quite well, despite of not having an elected auditor, probably because of the professionals in the auditor's office. So even though we're not required to have one, we apparently don't really need one. So I would ask the county board to lower the auditor's salary to whatever minimum is allowed by law. I would assume that's probably $30,000 or $40,000 a year. And if we did that over 4 years, including benefits, we would probably save the county about $250,000. Similarly, we are about to, we're going to elect a new clerk of the circuit court. And it doesn't seem that anyone on the county board has evaluated whether or not this needs to be a full-time position. It's currently also, the salary reflects a full-time effort, but I'm not sure that this is necessary. So similarly, we should lower the salary for that position also to the minimum allowed by law. One of the board members, current county board members in the newspaper several weeks ago was quoted as saying we shouldn't do this just because Mr. Winkle is running, but Mr. Winkle is no longer running. He managed to, you know, get continued employment at the university, so he's no longer interested in the county clerk's position. So therefore we should also lower that salary to the minimum required, which hopefully would be about $40,000. Thank you.
Jerome Bomberger.
Hello, my name is Jeremy Bamberger, and I live at 906 South Maple in Urbana. The first thing I would like to urge the board to do tonight is include a provision in a motion which will be considered on the agenda. It's my understanding that this board will consider the constitution of a citizens advisory task force to present information regarding improvements and implementing suggestions in the jailing communities report. I believe that this is absolutely necessary, that it is absolutely necessary to include a binding structural connection between this task force and the team constituted last week by the Facilities Committee, this being the jail space, the jail space improvement project planning team was constituted last week without, I might add, emendation or contestation. It was approved despite public comment and comment from the board as written on the agenda. Now, because of this specifically, I think it's absolutely necessary that we include a provision in the motion that you will evaluate tonight that states that any motion brought to the floor of this board by the jail space improvement project planning team is out of order unless it is approved first by the Citizens Advisory Task Force. This, as far as I can tell, is the only way to establish a true structural linkage between the two groups constituted not as committees, but as extra administrative bodies by this board. Thank you for your time.
Susan Parente.
Thank you, Jeremy. My name is Susan Parente. I live in Urbana. I'd also like to talk about the jail expansion, which I still consider a proposal, though you have renamed it a plan. I would say, with all respect, that you have fast-tracked this proposal. You have done what my father would say, done a quick thing, a quick and nasty thing, really quickly. And I'd like to talk about that in order to make a proposal about it. My thought was that there is so much controversy that you witnessed in the last 3 weeks that this should have indicated to you as a representative body that there is not a consensus in the community nor with yourselves. One, you seem to have effectively ignored all the public controversy that I heard. There was not a single proposal in favor of that. So I wonder who you're listening to. Is there another public that you meet on Wednesday that talks about how what a good idea that was? So your voting last week did not reflect what the public was saying. Second, you not only ignored the public, you badmouthed the public. The commentary that I heard, sir, was that the public didn't know what it was talking about, that we didn't come with our facts, we hadn't done our research. In a certain way, metaphorically, we, the public, are kids, and you're our parents. You're the people who know better, and we kids came and we were not prepared. Third, there is no indication that this will become a public referendum about the jail issue. There's no mechanism in place. So the fast-tracking, the speeding, is being done in order that we do not listen to the public. Now, in the past, up to this year, I would have called this behavior corporate. This refusal to put the proposal to the public, I would have called it corporate, and I am not a fan of corporate. I would have called it patriarchal, because Mr. Betts is obviously the daddy that you're all listening to. But now this year, I have another word. Ladies and gentlemen, you are acting like the 1%. You are taking a vast amount of money in a recessionary time, 20, 25, 30 million, you know it's going to go up. And you are fast-tracking it because you are not interested in public input. This is the behavior of the 1%. Now, most of you probably do not live in rich, expensive houses, etc. But this way of taking something that should be decided by the public, of whom you are the representative, you are our public servants, and simply turning it into a thing already, a plan and not a proposal, is the behavior of the 1%. I am part of Occupy Champaign-Urbana, and I'm linked to the Occupy Quad. This has come to our attention, and we're interested in turning things that are being treated like 1%, where no public participation as a proposal is being looked for. We would like to treat this as a proposal, and we would like to see forums at the public library, we'd like this talked about and discussed. And my thought is the reason it is being fast-tracked is because you know that the public will not go along with this for two reasons. You've heard from the people who hate jails. You have not heard from the people who hate the people in the jails. People hate prisons, but you have not heard the people who hate prisoners. I went today with my little Zoom tape recorder to places that have the Ron Paul sign, Marianne's Diner, the balloon place, and I floated a balloon in the air and asked people, do you know that the county board's going to be spending 20, 25 million of our dollars to make a nice new jail? And zoom, there came Sock, the soft on crime remark, which is what? I can't even remodel my basement and these prisoners are going to have a nice new facility? They don't deserve it. Now, we in the Occupy are going to make this visible. If you refuse public input, we're going to bring it to the public's attention. We're going to have things happening in Urbana, public library. And since you are our daddies, you should explain to we stupid public, you should go to these forums and explain to us why you are voting the way you are, why you are not considering it a proposal, why you've reconstituted this as a plan. Thank you.
Is there further public participation? Okay, thank you for your time. Move on to communications from the board. Mr. Kurtz.
Thank you. I have some good news to share with the board. I have this communique concerning an update on the Clinton landfill. The city of Bloomington held a work session yesterday regarding the proposed intergovernmental agreement for the Clinton landfill site. The city council has indicated their intent to join the consortium and approve the agreement at the next city council meeting. I think that's really good news. Secondly, we're working on with the chief of staff of Senator Dick Durbin to meet with him sometime next week concerning the Clinton landfill. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any other communications from the board? I see none. Let's go on to finance. Mr. Berginti.
Okay, first on the agenda, a budget transfer, 12-2 for $237,736 from the Access Initiative Fund to reduce original personnel budget. Is there a motion for approval? By Ralph, is there a second? By Geraldo, discussion? Patsy.
Maybe Ms. Busey can explain this. They alluded to this a little bit when they presented before us that they were contracting out some of the staff, but I need a little bit more clarity on the rationale for doing this. Because I thought the Access Initiative was supposed to pull everything together, and now they're...
Mr. Tracy is here and can answer that question.
Thank
Peter.
You so much.
Please.
Well, ultimately, the plan is for the staff that are currently working for the county, who are temporary employees, to be spun off to community agencies. And the issue there, at this point, the purpose of this transfer is that we have four staff that are no longer working as temporary employees for the county. Two of them are now hired by a community agency, and the intent is to move the money from the salary line to the contributions and grants line. Part of the reason is that these employees are going to actually be doing direct service work, and the statutes do not allow the Mental Health Board to do direct services. And so that's one of the main reasons we're spinning them off. And this is going to happen as the federal grant over the 6 years goes down, the amount of money that we get goes down, there will be less staff, and we will have to be working on our sustainability plan. And so you will see a continuation of this trend.
Thank you very much.
Carol?
And who's going to actually get this money?
This would be Don Moyer Boys and Girls Club. The contract is with them. But there will be other contracts with community agencies.
Other questions for Peter while he's up? Okay, thanks.
Thank you.
Other discussion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
Aye.
That motion carries. Second item, an amendment, 12-9 for $22,215 out of the RPC. IDOT, this is for analysis and retiming of additional designated signalized intersections in Champaign-Urbana and the U of I to improve safety. Is there a motion for approval?
So
by Stan, seconded by Al. Discussion. Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? That motion carries. The third item is an amendment, 12-10, for $3,000 out of the state's attorney's office, and this is an amendment that's required due to an increase in cost for appellate prosecutor services. Is there a motion for approval? By Carol, is there a second? By Jan, discussion. Stan?
I'm just going to ask a question. Is the cost increase
due to the population increase? They have some sort of formula they use based on population. Is that the understanding?
Yes, they do. We've been paying $27,000 a year for this service for probably at least 15 years, and our population in 2010 went over 200,000, which triggered this increase to $30,000 a year.
That's what I thought. Thank you.
Further questions? Carol?
The increase is $3,000.
Oh, okay. We're making up the difference.
It was $27,000 budgeted, but it's actually $30,000 this year.
Other questions? All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Fourth item, an amendment 12-11 for $63,200 out of the Court Complex Construction Fund. This is to cover all the project costs for the courthouse sound and video arraignment system, as well as for the Sheriff's Office for court security personnel monitoring the building during off-hours installation. Is there a motion for approval by Stephanie, seconded by Steve O'Connor? Discussion. Stan.
We discussed this in caucus, and the sheriff may be able to answer this, but since this was an unplanned event, the overtime, I understand, is because of the location and the security of the courthouse, but would there be any way in the future with your budget that that overtime cost may be offset by other overtime that may not be needed? That's a good question.
Sheriff.
Thank you, Patrick.
The answer is I don't know.
That's even better.
Yeah. I mean, there's no direct relationship between this project and any of our other overtime activities, whether it be crimes or the fair or anything. This was not planned. I will also add some courthouse personnel have offered to step in and fill some of the gaps, so it's not all being done by court security at overtime.
Chief?
I heard on the radio the other day that the chief judge has put a hold on this until he got some more input. Is that going to affect this, or are we just going to go ahead and do it? Or?
This project is moving forward. I'm not aware that there's been a hold placed on it.
Well, it was on WDWS, and they certainly wouldn't lie to us.
Yeah, they're working on this. I think it's scheduled to be completed within the next 2 weeks.
Okay.
Patsy, then Stephanie.
I think what he heard was that the state had approved videoing of court cases, and the judges here said they'd like to another county to use as a model,
which is different than this project.
Stephanie.
Part of this overage for the overtime, I believe we had money left over in reserves around $300,000. Is that correct? With the courthouse improvement, is that
you
right?
Had $300,000 in the court's construction fund, which you are using for this project. $100,000 was budgeted. The actual total cost of the project right now, including a contingency, is anticipated to be $163,200, which includes court security working from 4:30 p.m. till midnight while this installation is occurring in off hours.
So we have the funds to cover this already.
It's in the court's construction fund.
Thank you.
Other questions? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Motion carries. From the addendum, item 5 is an amendment 12-12 for $21,000 out of the RPC to reflect receipt of new contract for a county fiscal 12 to administer the DCEO grant for construction of sanitary storm sewer separation on behalf of the village of Milford. Is there a motion for approval by Pius? Is there a second?
Second.
Who's John? Discussion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? That motion carries. Use me returning on my device to save the county money from print costs.
Thank you.
Just throw that in.
Thank you.
From Animal Control. I'd like to suggest an omnibus motion. This is a request for approval of revised intergovernmental agreement for animal control services and animal impound services with the village of Pasotum. Is there a motion for approval by a bunch of people? My goodness. How about Jan and Geraldo? Discussion. Quiz.
What are we discussing, an omnibus motion or
I believe that was an omnibus motion by Jan and seconded by Geraldo. Discussion on that? Anyone? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? That motion carries. Likewise, with everything from C, items 1 and 2, a request for approval of application and, if awarded, renewal of Violent Crimes Victims Assistance Grant for fiscal 2013 and of continued grant funding from the Illinois Criminal Justice Information Authority. Is there a motion for approval by Stan, second by Ralph? Discussion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? That motion carries. From the Sheriff's Office, also suggesting omnibus for all three. These are requests for approval of contract to provide special police services for the villages of St. Joe, Philo, and Sydney. Is there a motion for approval by Stephanie, seconded by Al? Discussion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? That motion carries. From the State's Attorney's Office, a request for approval of application and, if awarded, renewal of Violent Crime Victims Assistance Grant. Is there a motion for approval by Jan, seconded by Stephanie? Discussion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? That motion carries. Next up, Deb, County Administrator.
The fiscal 2012 General Corporate Fund Revenue and Expenditure Projection Report is at your desks this evening. This report reflects basically receipt of 1 month worth of revenue and 2 months worth of expenditure, so it's very tentative, very preliminary. Right now, it looks like revenue would come in for this fiscal year at 98%. As you will recall, we received a very large payment from state reimbursement that should have been posted to 12, so there's a $535,000 deficit anticipated on the state reimbursement revenue line. Some of the other revenue lines that are tracking not where budgeted include fines and some of the general government, which are fees. The good news is the sales taxes are stable, fairly stable. I can tell you, not included in this, we did receive sales tax in February, which reflect November, and the overall quarter-cent sales tax was up 5% for November, which one of the largest increases we've seen in the last couple of years. The public safety sales tax quarter-cent was only up just under 2%, which tells us that a lot of that increase was in vehicle sales. The bottom line, if you go to the expenditure report on the second page, right now it looks like we would spend 99.7% of what is budgeted. Some of the lines where we would anticipate spending more, one of them is postage, and quite frankly, in the last 2 weeks, we have done a mailing for the county clerk of 125,000 pieces and a mailing for the supervisor of assessments of 78,000 pieces, so that was a fairly significant hit all at once. This is a big mailing year because of activities that are going on in both the county clerk's office and in the area of assessments. So it looks right now like it would be likely that we would spend most of our expenditure budget, which brings us to the projection, summary projection report. Projected right now would be a deficit on this year's budget of about $700,000, which once you subtract out the outstanding nursing home loan, would leave us at a position of right under 10% with an ending fund balance of $3.1 million. The budget change report is the next page, and the only change so far to the general corporate fund was a $14,000 change for the Clinton landfill contract.
Any questions for Deb on those reports? Patsy.
Just two comments. The United States Postal Service probably thanks the county for job security for all the mailing. And the second is I'm sure all the county board members would love to lower the mailing costs if we all had iPads.
Any other questions for Deb?
Thanks, Patsy.
Motion to accept and place those reports on file, please, by Aaron, seconded by Lorraine. Any other comments? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? That motion carries. Item 3.
The elected official salaries, okay, the memorandum in your packet is the same memorandum that you had last month, which provides some different options for the elected official salaries decision. What is added is information that you requested at your meeting last month. So on page 136, for the comparable counties, you will see the longevity of each elected official. In other words, what date did they assume the office that they currently hold? On page 137, you had asked for the comparison of where elected official salaries were in Champaign County with the comparable counties in the year 2004, because that is a year that is referenced in the memorandum as when we started to try to put more process with this whole issue. So that information is available for you. And then on pages 138 and 139, this is the history of the elected official salaries being set by the Champaign County Board going back to 1986. And what is included is the annual percentage increase received by each elected official with the decisions that the board made about salary increases. And the top line for each year is the actual CPI for that fiscal year. You'll see there are many years where there are zeros. You'll see there are years where there are big increases. Those years are catch-up years, I would call them. But looking at the current elected official salaries and focusing back to fiscal 2004, which seemed to be something that you were doing at your last meeting, if you look at the box on the bottom of page 139, that shows you what the average annual increase for each elected official has been going from 2004 to 2012, what the total dollar increase was for those years, what the total percent increase was from their fiscal year 2004 salary to their fiscal year 2012 salary, and the impact of the CPI for those same years. So, for example, the county clerk and treasurer and sheriff, their salaries basically increased 35% from 2004 to 2012, and the actual CPI impact for those same years is 22.5%. The disparity is greater with the circuit clerk, auditor, coroner, and recorder who have had larger salary increases the last 2 years, where you can see that over that same time period, their wages have increased by almost 70%. When you look at all of this information, I think that looking at the option of a four-year wage freeze for the wages that you are setting at this point in time is certainly realistic, and it is supported by historically that has been done in the past, too, as a way to counterbalance increases that were budgeted in 2008 and were more than what was probably required by CPI over these last 2 years. When you have to set salaries 4 years at a time in advance, it's very difficult to know what the economy is going to do and what the impact of that is.
Questions? Comments?
Move adoption of a four-year wage freeze for the appropriate officials.
The motion by Tom.
Second.
Seconded by Quiz. Discussion. Patsy.
Well, I'm not totally comfortable with across-the-board wage freeze because I do think there's still some major disparities between the salaries and, in particular, the circuit clerks. Salary seems to be skewed quite a bit higher than any of the others. So I would like to hear my fellow county board members' thoughts on amending Mr. Betz's motion that we first discuss adjusting the circuit clerk's salary before we go into a freeze across the board.
Are you making a motion?
Yes.
To what?
I'm not clear what the motion is.
The motion is an amendment to Mr. Betz's motion that the circuit clerk's salary be adjusted to be in compliance with the top salary of the other three, which I believe is what, roughly 86 plus 1,000, and the rest be frozen across the board for 4 years.
There's an amended motion on the floor. Is there a second to it? Seconded by Astrid. Now I'm going to pause for a second, ask the original mover and our esteemed parliamentarian if that is proper, should we be splitting it?
Well, she's making an amendment to the motion, which is to reduce one of the salaries and take it out of the thing. I think it's perfectly proper.
Okay, just checking. Okay, discussion on that. First Pius, then Stan.
Point information is, can we find out what exactly the salaries would be?
If you look on page 139, I would ask Ms. Petrie if she could clarify. So are you saying that on December 1st, 2012, the circuit clerk's salary should be $84,940, which is the current salary of the county clerk and the treasurer?
I said 86 plus.
Okay. So are you using the anticipated number for December 1st, 2013 of $86,639? And that would be the circuit clerk salary on December 1st, 2012?
Yes.
That's so right. December 1st, 2012, the circuit clerk would be $86,639 and frozen for 4 years?
Yes.
Stan, I wasn't prepared for some of this discussion. I know that anybody can make a motion, but, you know, I feel like if we're singling out one office, that it's not fair to not look at all of them, because some of the others have increased greatly also. So I think, again, we need to be fair across the board, and I would hope that there's some more discussion on that before we move forward with that motion.
Any other discussion specifically to the amendment? First John, then Tom.
I have a real problem with this. The criteria, unfortunately, for us for setting these salaries are basically limited to what the job entails, and we're limited even with that. We know the job description, but also comparables to like-sized counties. And if the board decides to do this, we are going to put our circuit clerk under, except for, I believe, Sangamon County?
Rock Island.
Yes. We're going to put them out of the range that the past the board has decided to keep these elected officials in. I think it's just out of line. I'm for keeping a four-year freeze. I think it'll equalize, but every county in the state is in the same boat financially. There's not going to be any increases, I'll guarantee, in any county. If there are, those elected officials are going to hear it from their constituents and probably other employees within that county. So I'm for just sticking with no increase for 4 years and not messing with any of these salaries. It's taken years to build these up. It's cost money, and we've got them built up to where they're within the averages, within the ranges of the other county, these counties that are comparable. And we are limited on judging the salaries of these by the composure of the office. So that's all I have. Thank you.
Still discussion to the amendment. Tom, then Chris, then Astrid.
I echo what Mr. Schrader said. I think he's absolutely correct. I think if you look at this office and the responsibilities of this office and the study of all of the functions of payroll and supervising people and making sure that you know what the courts are doing and working in that system, it is not an easy job, first of all. It takes a lot of skill. I suspect if you did a study of it, they might actually recommend a higher salary. I cannot see lowering that salary. I don't like freezes in general. I'm willing to deal with the freeze. I made the motion, but I absolutely am opposed to the amendment. I think it's a very big mistake.
Chris?
I'm really on the fence about this. I mean, I appreciate the comments that Mr. Sandifer made during public participation to the effect that, you know, one way to address the concern about equity among positions is not just to increase all the other positions but to lower this one. I mean, I think that's a point well taken. Deb, you at one point had indicated that there was there had been a two-tier approach sort of agreed to in terms of that some of these positions should be viewed as a higher tier than the other positions?
That's correct.
And which were the three upper tier? Which were the upper tier positions?
The sheriff is on his own.
Right.
The county clerk, the treasurer, and the circuit clerk were classified as the same. And the auditor, coroner, and recorder were classified as smaller.
But what we have here is, in fact, an inversion of that?
Yes, as a result of the last 2 years when the county clerk and treasurer's salaries were frozen and the auditor, coroner, and recorder were on the tail end of receiving annual 4% increases.
I mean, I don't like to make legislation on the floor here, but it seems like if we're rewriting the ledger as we go, we ought to set all the salaries to the 86,328 to at least get, other than the sheriff obviously, to bring this closer to equity than what we have now.
I share
Mr. Trader's discomfort at a quick fix to this problem on the county board floor.
If I could, if you look on page 139 and you look from 2012 through 2015, if you do a four-year wage freeze for the salaries that you are setting right now, and in 2 years when you're setting the salaries for the county clerk, treasurer, and sheriff, and you provide continuing, you know, modest 2% annual increases to those positions, by 2015 you will have reestablished the equity that existed before 2008.
With the exception of the circuit clerk.
The circuit clerk
is in the upper tier?
The circuit clerk should be basically the same as the county clerk and treasurer.
Okay. So you're saying that the four-year freeze affects the equity that we're trying to get to because the circuit clerk doesn't receive an increase, but the county clerk and treasurer.
If in 2 years, when the county board sets the salaries the next time for the four-year term for the county clerk and treasurer and considers continuing more modest annual increases of 2%, I mean, back in 2008, it seemed like 3.5% to 4% was the average increase of wages at that point in time. Moving forward, if 2% is considered to be that, and if the board adopts that in 2014, for those positions who are elected in 2014, you will have reestablished the equity halfway through that term and at the end of the current wage freeze for the other four.
I guess based on that, I would concur that this gets us where we want to be in 2015, so I think I'll come down with Mr. Schrader on this one.
Astrid, microphone, please.
It seems to me since the circuit clerk did pop ahead only by an accident of timing, and since a person who's been there about 20 years is going out and will have a new person, I see no barrier to lowering that salary to where the others are.
Shall we go ahead and vote on the amendment first? Everybody ready?
Can you just make the motion for me? I'm sorry, I had to go.
It is a motion to amend to the original motion of the four-year wage freeze. The amendment is to reduce the circuit clerk's salary to $86,639 in year one and then freeze it at that for the rest of the term.
So all those in favor of the amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
Aye.
That motion fails. Back to the original motion. Per Mr. Betz's original motion. Discussion on that. Ready to vote?
Would you state the motion, please?
It was per the recommendation as... Go ahead.
It's for a four-year wage freeze for the circuit clerk, auditor, coroner, and recorder, and for the board chair, it would be a two-year wage freeze because you only deal with the board chair's salary 2 years at a time for each session of the board.
Ready to vote. Carol, first.
Just a clarity point. So the recommendation basically is to freeze those positions, allowing for equity to go across the board, basically.
It would eventually be reestablished in 2015.
All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
Aye.
That motion carries. Next up, item number four.
The next item is, in the budget process, you had received additional funding requests from general corporate fund departments, and it was determined that those requests would be reviewed in February. And so this is the review. Provided for you a listing of what those requests were. Based on the general corporate fund report that you just heard a little bit earlier, and based on the position of the general corporate fund at the beginning of fiscal year 2012, the fund balance was at 10.3%. It was determined back in September that if the fund balance were healthier than 10%, that some consideration could be given for using the funds in addition to the 10% fund balance, which at this point is right at $102,645. Because of the uncertainty of the future of the general corporate fund and the fact that our total revenue increased only by 0.4% in fiscal 11 as compared to fiscal 10, I would not recommend that the board add any ongoing or recurring funding requests because you're building additional expense into future budgets that we don't know that we will have available, especially when we consider that we will have ongoing increases in personnel costs. The other thing that you could consider is the one-time expenditure requests, and those are on the bottom of page 141. There were actually five of them. Four of them might be considered viable with the amount of money that you have available to you. However, my recommendation to you would be that you fund none of these requests at this time. As you saw in the earlier report, it looks as though we could end with a deficit this year, so we should probably protect what is in our fund balance as much as we can.
Chief, then Pius.
I would move that we not fund these as recommended.
Second.
It's a motion by Chief, seconded by Tom. Pius, then Patsy.
I'd like to amend the motion to bring it back to the board in 2 months.
Six.
It is over.
So the motion by Pius is to amend it to bring it back to the board in 2 months. Is there a second to that motion?
Okay.
Seconded by Stan. Discussion to the motion to bring it back, specifically to bring it back to the board in 2 months. All those in favor?
Aye.
Hold on. I'm sorry. There were a couple of hands. Pat, nothing. Pius, anything? Okay.
Mr. James.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed?
Aye.
Show of hands. All those in favor of bringing it back in a couple months? We will bring it back in 2 months. Back to the motion, and we will be adding bringing it back in 2 months. Discussion to that motion. Patsy.
Just a couple of information questions that might help my decision. On the reference on page 141, these are one-time expenses. How is the truancy service program a one-time expense?
They requested it only for this fiscal year.
Okay. Second question is, now that the coroner is doing saving some money and then eventually be generating some money. Is that not a possibility?
He's here. If you want to ask him that question.
Dwayne, you want to speak to it?
Actually, it is a possibility, and I went back actually last week and looked at my funding, and when I did turn in the budget for this year, I didn't, the increased savings or the revenue that's coming into the coroner's office right now, I didn't account for that. There was a significant increase in that, of that, about $7,000 I accounted for in my expenditures for this year. The rest of it I didn't account for in my expenditures, so basically it's being collected and going into the general fund. If I go back and look at the numbers, it's possible there's enough money there, but it would require me to come back to the board for a budget amendment because those revenue fees are just going into the general fund right now.
Okay, that's helpful. I have one more question. And may I ask the question of the sheriff?
Let it rip.
Okay.
on this squad car cameras. Are there ever any grant funding that help pay for such a purchase? This is a fairly large purchase.
The cameras that we have now have been donated by the over the course of time by the Journey Foundation, and as were these. Plus, Urbana gave us, they switched systems, and we did them some favors, and I believe they gave us two or three cameras. That's how we have what's there now. But in terms of going like the DOJ or something like that, there's nothing specific for this that I'm aware of, Patsy.
Okay, thank you.
Other discussion, quiz?
I just want to follow up with the coroner's comments on the general fund. Did we account for that revenue in the budget?
I understood that the coroner, when he prepared his budget, was budgeting for what he expected to receive. If what he's telling you is accurate and there's actually more revenue coming in than what is budgeted, a revenue-neutral budget amendment might be in order for him to bring back outside of this.
Great. Thank you.
Anything else? Diane.
Just a question on this truancy services program. Just wondering if maybe in the next couple months or something that maybe because the school year is coming a little closer to the end that maybe that would be a lesser amount and we could consider it for that.
Basically, if we wait two more months, I think you could consider that that would probably be half because it would only be for the fall semester.
Other discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Item number five.
And the final item is the annual abatement resolution to abate property taxes that have heretofore been levied for the payment of bonds, which are being paid with alternate revenue sources, primarily the public safety sales tax. And or some of these abatements are the result of refundings where we have restructured our bonds and are actually paying less than what would have originally been anticipated for fiscal year 2012.
Is there a motion for approval by Pius, seconded by Chris? Discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
Aye.
That motion carries. Is there a motion to accept and thank you, Deb. Is there a motion to accept and place the auditor's report on file?
So moved.
By Lorraine, seconded by Geraldo. Discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? That motion carries. Item G and a half, Treasurer Dan. G and a half.
Get on my knees. I don't have anything to tell you other than just that my report is posted on the website. And I'd be glad to answer any questions if you have any. If not, I'd ask that it be accepted and placed in file, placed on file too.
Motion by Quiz to do so, seconded by any number of people. I'll say Geraldo again. Everybody's so enthusiastic to do that. Any questions for Dan? All right, thank you.
Thanks.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The motion carries. Under other business, a resolution authorizing the board chair to execute the collective bargaining agreement. Is there a motion for approval by Tom? Seconded by?
Second.
John, discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Motion carries. There's no chair's report. Is there any other business for finance? Items for consent are A, 2, 3, 4, and 5 from the addendum, B, 1 and 2, C, 1 and 2, D, 1, 2, and 3, E, 1, F, 4, H, 1. That's it from finance. Thank you.
Okay. Our first item on the agenda, the agency presentation, is canceled. Joe Gordon is unable to be here tonight. We have our monthly reports, Section B, if anybody would like to make a motion.
I'm the best.
Second.
Motion. Play small on file.
Omnibus motion by James to put those on file, seconded by Kurtz. Any discussion on the agency reports? Questions, discussion? All those in favor of placing those reports on file, say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Okay. Item C is for the Emergency Management Agency, request approval, application and awarded acceptance of hazardous materials, emergency preparedness grant, and HMEP grant. That is to form a local LEPC, a local emergency planning committee. The grant, if we get it, would be for just under $7,000, basically for administrative costs for that. And there will be no extra cost to us for matching funds on that.
So moved.
It's a motion by Jay, seconded by Esri. Are there any... is there any discussion on that? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion passes. Under other business, we have an item for establishment of the Citizens Advisory Committee to garner impactors in social in the justice system to present information regarding improvements and implementing suggestions in the Jailing Communities Report. Moved by Langenheim. Second by Ammons. I guess for discussion, James.
Now, if I'm reading this right, it's basically going to be a committee that's going to be formed to look at issues affecting the jail. They will make a recommendation, much like the jury.
Correct.
Commission. They will have no governing or vote at the table.
Can you be more specific in that? If you mean, will this... commission.
Well, my specific would be, let's say that this committee starts talking about the jail issue again, and basically any report they give us, we can look at it, take it under advisement, but it will not have a bearing, per se, as they will be able to sit at the table and say, no, we don't agree with that, like the gentleman spoke earlier, because the final vote should lie with this body, because we're elected by the people out there. I appreciate that people are willing to take time to serve on committees and give us their input because there are things all of us overlook, but I don't think they necessarily should be sitting here and telling us that they have a voting right when it comes to an issue.
That is correct. That is the intention. We actually had,
and I didn't use my legal language.
Had been hoping to be a little more specific in the motion, but Pius wandered off for a little bit there. So to be more specific, we were thinking, but it is not currently in the motion, of setting this to be nine people passing the general commission tonight, setting a March 2nd deadline for applications to be accepted so we can look at applications next time with me as Deputy Chair for Justice doing the appointments. I assume we probably need to put that into the motion, right? Is that an amendment by Weibel?
I will make that amendment.
Is there a second?
Second.
By Quisenberry. Abbott.
I actually appreciate, I don't know her name.
Farnham.
And her information she provided for this committee tonight. I'd like to actually make an amendment to the motion and request that the committee that is the planning team that's put together underneath Justice and Social Service becomes a partner team to the planning team that is put together other facilities for advising facilities for the ultimate recommendation to
point of order. There's amendment on the floor. Ms. Ammons is trying to amend the main motion. We have to deal with the amendment, first amendment first.
Okay. So
we can amend the amendment, but she's not.
We have the Weibel amendment on the floor. Would anybody like to speak to the amendment to add more specifics?
The amendment is to the structure will be nine members from the public, and that Mr. Richards will appoint them next, or will receive applications until March 2nd. Mr. Richards will appoint them next month on the 13th, I believe.
And that
by the 13th.
Starting at the end of this meeting. We'll do an open call for anybody in the public to apply for this, Mr.
Point
James.
Point of clarification, you will appoint them, but this board will approve.
That is.
No, actually, it's just he will approve. It is not a, it's a task force.
Okay.
Yeah, well, and as you said, this commission will not, certainly not, like the planning team, have binding authority over the county board. The intention is to look at a lot of the issues that Ms. Ammons put out in her report, look at the issues that Mr. Betts put out in his report, and anything else we can think of that the commission wants to look to, and bring some information to the board so it can make as best a decision possible on how we need to move forward on this issue, basically. But so, Ms. Petrie. Gotcha, Lloyd. Ms. Petrie. I'm sorry. But yeah, Patsy Petrie.
I'm having a little problem with the way this is evolving to be structured based on Chair Weibel's amendment, and I'm basing my concern on the conversation we had in the Democratic Caucus when I asked about the Open Meetings Act in relationship to the project team. And it appears to me from the explanations and the conversation that's going on that this will be a somewhat similar structure as the project team. In other words, it is not going to be approved by the county board and therefore means it will not be under the Open Meetings Act. And I find that a little bit troubling.
I certainly intend to have this commission follow the Open Meetings Act, post all meetings like the jury commission, have open meetings, possibly have forums outside of here, and keep minutes. Mr. Quisenberry. Ms. Cohort.
You had Lloyd first.
I'm sorry. Lloyd, did you have anything to say? Or was that it before?
I had a question.
Okay.
We're drifting, so I can listen. No problem.
Okay.
I have a couple questions that I have is, how do we arrive at this advisory committee when the facilities committee, which is an equal committee to the socials committee, basically is going to create alternatives to creating a facility? And that facility, the input of this committee would have an impact as to what gets created inside the jail. Library space, space for teaching and classrooms, medical facilities, dining facilities, and all of that. I was under the impression that this committee would be an alternative to what was already proposed or was going to be proposed by the facilities committee. So the chair of the facilities committee, Tom Betts, organized a team to go ahead and look at the facilities, which, you know, with all due respect and authority, he has the right to do that. You, as the chair of the social justice committee, will have the same authority and power to create a committee to look into the alternatives that could also utilize the funding for the quarter cent tax. That's what I would have imagined. And as an alternative, both teams would then get together before any planning gets down and then decide if the public would would like to see such a facilities created with the input of the county board and the social justice team that was created to provide additional input from drug resistance, perhaps Prairie Center, perhaps the mental health physicians and departments, perhaps faculty on the University of Illinois, and professional people that are good at doing that. Perhaps Professor Brennan that talked about restorative justice. But what I see here is a fast track on building the facility without discussing the alternatives. And I would imagine the alternatives will have just as much weight in this committee as the facilities committee would have on creating the facility. Because you can't create the facilities unless you have the input of what actually is going to go in the box.
Well, this commission certainly would want to look at alternatives. And I want to keep it pretty broad on pretty much have anybody apply. I think that's the best way to go now. However, we are certainly looking to have as diverse a group as possible, sociologically, racially, geographically. Hopefully have some advocates for the mentally ill involved, and like you said, and a number of other people. We'll have to see who's interested, but it would be good if we had some criminal justice professors who were involved in things such as this, various community activists possibly, prisoner advocates, or an ex-offender group. These would all be great possible ideas to bring ideas to the table for this.
But my flip question to that is that if you open it up as such, instead of saying, I think that the stakeholders to basically providing these alternatives are these professionals, and you named the group, and we as a board approve that group, I think that's the way to go, because then it goes back to what Patsy Petrie had indicated, what are the regulations with Open Meetings Act, how much public participation are people going to have in these providing input to these teams, and are these teams going to be the ultimate say-so in what gets done here at the county jail lot?
Mr. Betts.
First of all, no one has the ability to trump the county board's ability to have the say-so about what happens at the jail with regarding whether we build it or not. That is solely the county board. A committee can't do it. I think people have dramatically misunderstood the nature of what we did at facilities. When you begin the assessment process, when you hire, when you do an RFQ for this type of facilities assessment, that person, that team, that company that does it looks at all of this stuff. They do an analysis over who is in the jail, who is not in the jail, your diversion programs, your victim offender reconciliation programs, your post-detention treatments. They examine all of that, and they certainly will be going through all of the statistics. That will be right in the RFQ. That's a standard portion of what you're doing when you do that. And this committee that's gathering information and having its role certainly is not at odds with that, but that's one of the things you do with a planner. You know, when we were in Denver, we spent hours discussing, and this issue is, yes, you absolutely do that. It is part of that assessment process to make sure you're doing it right. How can you be more effective? There is not a vested interest in building more jail cells if you do not need them. There's all of these assumptions out there that are not true. But the idea that you include 9 members of the community directly on an assessment of the facilities committee would not be a good idea. It is something that consistently, when we were in Denver, the Justice Department, every advocate in that field said, don't do it. It was a huge mistake because you're assessing a facility in relationship to its use and function. The social policy issues are quite different than that. But keep in mind, the board always has the authority, no matter what committee you have dealing with these issues, the board has the authority. In terms of the Open Meetings Act, only county board members generally are going to be subject to the Open Meetings Act. If we appoint a majority of a quorum to a committee or create a subcommittee of the county board, we're going to be governed by the Open Meetings Act. Any committee, community committee, doesn't matter what it is, can always subject itself to it by saying, we're going to have all our meetings public, we're going to have them all open, and invite public participation. I would anticipate that being the case with any committee that we appoint or any committee that goes through this board, whether we're appointing them or not. I would expect the meeting to be open. That is the history of such things, unless it's a labor negotiation. In labor negotiations, we still announce the meeting. It may have to be closed because it's subject to special provisions, but the assumption that the public isn't going to be allowed to participate, I think, is dangerous overreaching.
Okay. I had Mr. Quisenberry at the top of the list.
Okay. I don't want to be in the position of arguing with a lawyer about the law, but I think there's no question that the committee that we're talking about will be subject to the Open Meetings Act because it is a committee empowered by this body. And I would suggest that committee would have a lot more credence and would be more consistent with our other appointment behaviors if it was approved by this body and not just empowered by the chair without an approval here.
Okay, and everyone remember we are speaking to the Weibel Amendment. I have Alex next on the list.
Thank you.
You're next. And you were on the list right under Mr. Alex.
Thank you. Is it my understanding that all that we are proposing to do in this amendment and in the main motion as amended is essentially giving you the authority to appoint this task force and saying that it will have 9 members? We're not imposing specific restrictions on who those members are. They could include members of the county board. It could include advocates from the community. It could include experts such as the sociologist who we heard from earlier. It could include even other elected officials if they were interested in participating and wanted to apply. Is that my understanding?
That is correct. Like, for instance, Ms. Colbert is on the jury commission as a member of the community, not as a county official.
Great. Thank you. I have much to say about this, but I will confine those comments to when we get back to the main motion.
Mr. Langenhorn.
There's been quite a bit of confusion about the relationship between committees and the board. We appoint the committee. We give it a charge. It's to do something. It's to look into something. We do not tell it what conclusion it is to bring to us. We cannot presume to do that. The committee is on its own. Conversely, the committee makes a report, but the committee doesn't tell us what to do. The committee's report is a recommendation, and we have the final say-so as to whether that is to be enacted or followed or how it is to be followed.
I have Ms. Ammons next. Anybody raise your hand if you want to get in the line.
Actually,
In regards to the amendment?
In regards to this amendment, yes.
Okay. There's a motion to suspend the rules by Ammons, seconded by Berkson. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion to suspend the rules passes. Does anybody have any questions for Professor Brannum, is that correct?
Yes.
Branham.
I've been called Barnum and a lot of things, but Branham.
Okay. Ms. Ammons.
Professor, thank you, first of all, for coming and not charging us a big fee for this line of question I'm about to ask you. But in your experience, and I know this is a very tough issue to try to figure out, you mentioned in public participation the necessity of these two committees to work together to come to some ultimate solution. And we're trying to figure out the scope of this thing. What would you recommend at this point the scope should be to connect these two committees?
That's a challenging question because, as I mentioned, I see the questions being addressed as inextricably connected. So there are multiple ways to do this. One is to have somebody who's basically a criminal justice planner who's working with both committees, and then there are some joint meetings. I do find it very challenging to envision this. The research that I have seen about facilities planning that includes looking at if people belong there and if there are alternative ways that are most effective do involve the public. So right now we're talking with a structure that doesn't include the public, as I understand, on the facilities committee. And the research has shown that that works best when including that and health and social services providers and education. So in terms of, if you're talking about the structure right now with two committees, you're going to have, first of all, in my opinion, some type of planner that's working with both, and that there are some meetings that include both, and a working and the consultant providing assistance to both groups. Okay.
Mr. Kurtz.
Yeah, I have a question. I don't know how this board
can take the responsibility or have the authority to say who belongs in the prison system. That's up to the courts and the judges, prosecutors, and the public defenders who work for their clients. We're not in that position to be able to make that determination on who belongs in jail or not. Our goal here is to find out if we're running a facility that's correct, that's civil, that works for the inmates and works for the security who guard the inmates, to perhaps have a facility that accommodates the needs of those inmates. And that, I think that's where our authority lies. We certainly can't choose to say that this person belongs in prison and that one doesn't. That's not our responsibility. That's the responsibility of the courts. So I don't know how these committees can even address that to us. We can't vote on that
right.
And say, well, there's an individual who belongs in prison and does it. That has to be up to the court system. So it's hard for me to see how that's going to be integrated with these committees.
Can I respond to that?
Am I speaking out of turn here?
No, not at all. First of all, the county board, in my opinion, has an unequivocal obligation to make sure that the jail is safe for the staff and for the inmates. But number two, it is imperative, even if we had infinite resources, which we do not, to make sure that the operations of the system are cost-effective. What I have found working with judges, prosecutors, defense attorneys, and others is that when we get into the data, we get into the research, we looked in at evidence-based practices, and we look at alternatives, we always find that we can do things better. But you are correct that it will be the judge that will be imposing sentences. I have worked with judges, and the judges yearn for a range of alternatives, as do many, particularly once they are aware of additional options, and once they find out about the data, whose specifics I haven't seen for this county. So I agree with you that the county board doesn't sentence. The county board's obligation is to make sure that jail is safe. But the county board has a responsibility to use the taxpayers' money wisely.
Ms. Holderfield was next.
Thank you very much for being here, because that has been my main concern is safety for all parties concerned. And I'm so glad that you have brought that up to this board this evening. So I just wanted to backtrack just for a second. You had mentioned a planner. So your advice to all of us is to first have a planner take a look at the facility to incorporate a more cohesive plan that's presented to the county board
to begin with.
Okay.
I guess what I was talking about is if you're going to have a structure that has two committees that are actually looking at overlapping issues. I have to confess I don't know what kind of staff we have here in terms of many counties have a criminal justice planner who would be working hand in hand to make sure that the activities are coordinated. The one committee, no matter what, as I understand it from what I've read in the paper, there are some serious safety issues at the downtown jail involving sight lines. That is a facilities question. But what happens to address that relates to these larger questions that research has demonstrated questions are best resolved by including members of the public, people with mental health expertise, and the like on that planning group.
Can I just do a follow-up real quick? You had mentioned also to have a judge on the original committee is in the best interest of all parties concerned. Is that correct?
Absolutely.
Okay. So looking at who's currently been approved to be on the committee, we have the sheriff, the state's attorney, the judge. Would you say that is a just as a beginning for us, a little bit more comprehensive and in line with what you would view as a fair overview that will be given to the county board?
The persons that you've mentioned
would need to be on the planning committee. That is a very narrow construct, but that is a beginning, but not nearly what we would consider an inclusive planning committee.
Okay, so to also then add an advisory committee. So my concern with the advisory committee is that, you know, I think if you're going to do a public advisory committee, that we should have some type of criteria set forth of who would best serve both sides with certain expertise. Do you not agree?
You need a range of expertise, absolutely.
Correct.
On that planning committee.
Yes.
Thank you.
Mr. Rosenberry.
I just want to clarify something I think I heard. I think I heard you say that you're not familiar with the alternative programs that are in place in Champaign County.
Well,
Is that correct? Years ago,
you mean currently?
Currently.
No, only what I have read. So I haven't read in the paper about the expansive utilization of the expansive options that are out there nationwide. Now, maybe they're being utilized and not reported on. I have not done an assessment of Champaign County.
Okay, so you're not familiar with our adult diversion program or our youth diversion program or our drug court or our mental health court?
Again, I should say one of the things that a group would look at is not just what's there, mm-hmm. but the extent to which it is used effectively optimally. In other words, sometimes we can have an option that's underutilized. I have not conducted that assessment. So my introductory comments here were simply there's a lot of data from working with other groups. I have seen that sometimes assumptions that are made that are incorrect. And the dynamism that I have seen between the public defender working with the prosecutor, working with the judge, working with members of the public as they ferret out these issues, it really is an incredible and productive dynamic.
Thank you.
Okay. Mr. Carter, you have a question for the professor?
Yeah. I'm going to go to Cal on that. I'm trying to figure out, what is this? Are we asking what is the correct committee to handle this and make the decision? Or what? Was that your question?
No.
Well, what are we trying to figure out about the committee?
Ms. Ammons.
The only point that I wanted to, I took notes from the speakers today, and I've not met Professor Branham before. And in her public participation, she mentioned several things that would absolutely impact what we ultimately do with jails. And I wanted to find out, in her experience, have you seen a committee structure that connected these two things and did this research before you decided to do pre-planning, break ground, and design kind of stuff? And that's what I was trying to get at, is that this planning team, because facilities has instituted a planning team, unfortunately, that does not include the public, then it makes it very difficult to get at what Mr. Richards has brought up to the committee tonight. And you need to connect these two to be effective. And so that's when she mentioned that I thought we could possibly get further information from her experience.
Well, I thought I'd explain that to you. It's simple. You have a current committee, which is the chief deputy committee, right?
Could you repeat that, Mr. Carter?
Aren't you the chief?
Chair.
What?
All right.
I am deputy chair for justice and social services.
Wait, I'm trying to clarify something here. Now, yes. That makes your duty to do what?
Well, this is not the facilities committee. So this is not facilities. So this committee and this commission would be not looking at the laying of the bricks and whatnot of a new jail, but looking in a policy sense at whether or not we need a new jail, programs that could be served and not served by various options.
Well, you really not answer my question, but I'll answer the question.
Please, Mr. Carter.
Now, well, I tell you, if I was in your shoes, I would be a committee to take care of this and bring it back. Also, I would have those committees understand that we're going to have a public forum. Then she wouldn't have to answer that question.
Thank you for point of support order. Of the motion of the amendment.
Are we getting off topic?
Yeah, are there any other questions for Professor Branham?
Thank you.
Not hearing any other questions for the professor, we are back to Chair Weibel's amendment to add specifics. Mr. Rosales.
I have some questions to also address. My perplexity of this problem is that the planning team and facilities already has a budget, already has allocated money for pre-planning and drafting.
Point of information, they have no budget.
How are they going to go ahead and draft
the budget? They have to come back to us to get money.
Pardon?
They have to come back to us to get money.
They have to come back. So there's no pre-planning when we do an RFP?
Come back to us.
Okay. And I'm wondering, because when you say a citizens review board, I think that's watered down. We need a group of professionals, advisors, that we could also hire as consultants to advise us as to the right decisions that we need to do within these facilities. And I think social justice plays just as crucial role as facilities plays a crucial role as the building. But the, also what goes inside that building, I think, should also come out of the social justice committee. So I have a problem with citizens advisory committee. That means we get a group of people from the IMC that nobody's going to respect to go ahead and bring forward and bring some ideas that nobody's going to vote on. What I'm talking about is the stakeholders and professional people. And that's what I would like to see as part of that committee, and also a consultant that we could pay that has done this in other communities or similar communities that would also participate in the assessment of what happens within that building. And I don't know if your intentions of this committee has that type of teeth and bite that we're looking for. And if it's such a controversial issue, and then we should make it very public, and I think that's what Carter is saying, and we should hold a lot more public forums at different venues so that both committees could intertwine. And then perhaps after November 2nd's election, we could make a solid decision, because most of the people that are deciding upon the jail issue are not going to be here in December. And I have also an issue with that these are the people that are, they don't have a political interest because they're walking off the board in November 2nd, and then we're going to be left with doing something that this board took upon themselves to do in 2012. And either way, whether we create a building or don't create it, we're still going to have to do something about that downtown jail because we're not able to move those prisoners anywhere within 5 years. And those conditions, from what I've heard, are appalling. So if we have to look at what are we going to do with the downtown. What we basically voted upon in the facilities committee has nothing to do with the downtown. It's like, that's a wash. We're going to go ahead and build this other one, and we're not going to throw good money after bad, and we're going to leave these people in there for the next 5 years so that when we decide to build it and transfer these prisoners, and then we'll move forward. I think we need to look at alternatives very carefully, and I can see this committee being a very crucial committee to make sure that that transition from point A to point B is done. That's why when we voted in the facilities committee, the pre-planning and design was not feasible until we have an assessment of what's going on, of the programs like Quisenberry has indicated, and many of the other things that we have discussed on three. One study session, one COW meeting with facilities, and now. I think that we need to look at that very carefully, and I think you need to look at the title of it, because right now what you're creating is something that's watered down that ain't going to fly. It ain't going to apply to the community, it ain't going to apply to this board, and it ain't going to apply across me.
Those are good ideas, and the intention is certainly to bring in some experts that can give us more knowledge and help us make better decisions. Can you speak to the progress task force?
Since we seem to be talking about
question. Does anybody else want to speak to the specific amendment by Chair Weibel? Mr. James.
Well, he was talking about setting up the committee with you having the appointment power, and you're right, we've all gotten off base. But what I've been hearing from the public is they want to be included, and I take exception to some of your ramblings there, Rosales, because I, as a community member, whether or not I've been in jail, which I haven't, but I might have insight that some person that's sat behind a desk all of his life doesn't have other than reading out a book. I think the community members that have an interest, and when they're screened, whoever is appointing them should have that authority to appoint a good mix. We shouldn't be setting guidelines and saying they must have a doctorate degree or be a mayor or whatever the you're leaning toward. I think people from all walks of life bring something to the table, period.
I think we have John Jay and Tom Betts on the facilities committees that represent this board and represent the people of Champaign County. And I think we should do equally the same in the social justice committee and not weigh with a lot of individuals that may not have a focus or an interest or a stakeholder.
Are we ready to vote on the amendment? Any other questions on the amendment? The amendment was to add some specifics to the motion.
It was to make 9 members and that you would appoint them. And we had appointments, they could apply until March 2nd, I believe, and then Mr. Richards would spend the following next 10 days or so and have numbers by the 13th.
Okay.
Members by the 13th, not numbers.
Ms. Petrie. That's the amendment. The motion is on the agenda. That's the amendment. Okay. Anything else on the amendment? All in favor of the amendment, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed?
Aye.
The amendment passes. We're back to the main motion. Does anybody else have any additional discussion on the main motion? Mr. Alex, if anybody else does, raise your hand. I'll write you down.
Thank you. I want to try to put this in perspective. I mean, the fact that we're even having this discussion arose in the context of the county looking at one very specific issue, which is poor conditions at the downtown jail. And recognition of the poor conditions at the downtown jail led to action by the facilities committee to say, we need to get a team together to look at what we can do about the poor facilities at the downtown jail, whether that's remodeling the downtown jail, whether that's expanding the satellite jail, closing the downtown jail. You know, I think all options are on the table in terms of what we can do to address that problem. But again, I want to stress, I mean, that's a facilities issue. I think it's appropriate the way in which it's being dealt with in terms of bringing in an expert who can work with the county to say, okay, here's what you got, and here's what you might be able to do, and here's how much it might cost. I respect the statements by people who say that the issue of, you know, how justice is administered in the county is inextricably linked with the jail, and obviously they are issues that are very closely related. But I don't want to sell this proposed committee or this proposed effort short by saying that it's only about the jail problem. I mean, most of the people who came in the last several meetings to give public comment, we're not concerned about the specifics of a bricks and mortar jail. They were concerned about overarching questions about how criminal justice is administered in Champaign County, some of which is under the purview of the county board and much of which is not. But I think we got a lot of excellent comments. We got a sense for the energy that's out there in the committee in terms of people's willingness to address and to talk about these issues and to look for solutions to these issues. So I am wholeheartedly in favor of a task force to look at and consider these issues. I think that what comes out of that task force has the potential to be valuable in ways other than informing, in addition to, but other than informing the jail process. I mean, this is a thing that the county, as a county board, these are issues that, as my understanding is, the county as a county board has not looked at in a long time, with the exception of the jury selection issue, which I think is a good model for this task force. I would argue that the county board is, obligated to consider these issues in the context of the jail project and otherwise. And I hope that you're able to find individuals who will participate in this task force with a spirit of identifying problems and coming up with solutions. I mean, there's a lot of concern about, who's going to be on the committee and who appoints the committee. I think what we need to do is get 9 qualified and insightful people in a room and talk about these issues. And I think it's hard for me to believe that good will not come out of that. I had to address this question. I mean, I know there have been rumors swirling about this already, and there's been talk about, oh, this is just going to be a witch hunt, and it's a place for people to get together and rant about the criminal justice system and all this. No. I mean, The committee is what the people who are on the committee make of it. And if I have anything to do with this, I don't want this to be a witch hunt, because witch hunts aren't productive. I mean, searches for solutions are productive. I think that the county is, in many ways, doing a good job administering criminal justice. I think the county can do a better job. I think it's very appropriate that we as a county board look at ways in which we can do a better job and ask the public to suggest ways in which we can do a better job. So I'm entirely supportive of this. I mean, it can't happen soon enough.
Would anybody else like to speak to the motion? Mr. O'Connor.
If we are indeed going to allow Michael Richards, the vice chairman or deputy chairman, to make these appointments, then it should say so. It doesn't say that here.
That was the amendment, right? That was in the amendment. Okay. Ammons and Petrie.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to take up Mr. Rosales' statements that I think may actually weigh on this motion that I'm about to make. I'd like to make a motion to amend the D1 on our agenda tonight to include a provision which will make any motion that is brought to the board from the Facilities Committee include the research and provisions from the Justice and Social Service Committee. That's my motion. Yes, I will. I'll repeat it. I'd like to make a motion to amend our current D1 item on our justice agenda tonight to include a provision that any recommendations or motions made by, or not motions, they can't make motions, but any recommendations made by the Facilities Committee include a provision that would take part of that advisement project from the Justice and Social Service Committee as well, that they would work together. I'd like to include a provision in this motion tonight.
Okay. We have an amendment seconded by Rosales. So, Carol, you're saying you want to amend this to have any recommendations made by the Facilities Project Team Task Force include recommendations made by this task force. Would anybody like to speak to that amendment? Mr. Quisenberry and Ms. Michaels.
I believe these groups do have to share information and work together. And I am certainly not in favor of either of these groups working too fast, but this would put a dependency on this group getting done with their work on the Facilities Committee making any substantial progress, and I'm concerned with that requirement. I guess I would be comfortable with an instruction for them to share information and to cooperate. But I would share Mr. Alex's hope and dream for this group to be beyond the jail. And so tying the Facilities Committee to the completion of the work of this Social Justice Committee, I don't think makes sense. So I would suggest that it not be that dependent.
Ms. Busey, could you speak to the project task force about what it exactly is going to be doing?
Well, the project team is currently writing an RFP, which will come back to this board before it is released to make sure it says exactly what this board wants it to say. And the RFP is to hire a consultant to conduct a needs assessment. And there's no reason that this board can't say that that consultant should also be consulting with a Citizens Advisory Committee if one has been established. And quite frankly, timing-wise, it's very likely that it would be established before the consultant would be brought on board by a decision made by the county board. The project team that was listed on the facilities agenda last week is staff who are going to work on the initiatives to bring work product to the county board to make decisions. The project team doesn't have any authority or jurisdiction to make decisions on behalf of the county board. And I think that not everyone fully understands that, and it is important that you understand that. So I see what is happening with the project team bringing an RFP to the county board to hire a needs assessment consultant to work with the sheriff and the judiciary and the state's attorney, but also to work with inputs from a citizens advisory committee as it develops its report for the county board, does take input from all areas, as Professor Branham has recommended is important to do. And then as we move forward, it's a, nothing that was presented at facilities last week predisposes or precludes what the county board will then do next. It will be up to the county board, based on that needs assessment, to decide, okay, now do we want to do an RFQ to hire an architect engineering firm to move forward with the next steps in this process? So I personally don't see that there's a great difficulty with the Citizens Advisory Committee being established here under Justice, as is being recommended, and properly constituted to share its concerns and recommendations with the county board, with the consultant that the county board will hire. And it, all of it comes together here with you, the county board. You are the ones that are going to make the decisions.
Are we going to be using, I'm sorry.
Mr. Rosales.
Are we going to be using the qualification-based selection process that we were given in March 1st? So that we could
not to hire the initial consultant. It's not required for a needs assessment. We're preparing a request for proposals, and there are numerous individuals and companies out there who are going to be very interested in responding to your request for proposal to hire a consultant to help you through this needs assessment phase.
And when does the phase of the pre-design artwork come in?
Sheriff, feel free to help me if I'm misstating anything here, but the needs assessment is to help you decide what kind of space do you need, what are the needs. You have mental health services that need to be provided. You have minimum security needs. You don't need maximum security everywhere. There are programs in the community that can impact the future population in the jail. All of that is done by the consultant. You don't really get to design development until you go through the RFQ process subsequent to the needs assessment to hire the architectural engineering firm who will then begin that process for you. And part of the reason, too, that looked like such a fast-tracked thing on the agenda last week, we were just trying to show you how long it would take before you could get to a comparative analysis of doing this space through a remodel at the Downtown Correctional Center and or building new. It takes at least a year to get there, and no one, especially on the project team, is bound to that schedule. We are happy to take as much time as is necessary to make sure that the decisions are properly made as we walk through this. We just wanted the board to realize you can't get a cost study analysis for at least a year. So we couldn't base this, just for you to be aware of that, because that was something that came out of the study session, that everybody wanted to know what the cost comparison was. We can't get to that point that quickly.
Diane.
Thank you, Ms. Busey. I think that.
I'd recognize Diane.
What did you say?
Sorry, Carol. I'm
looked through you.
Yes.
Couple things. One, I definitely agree with Mr. Quisenberry quite a bit on the two groups. We only voted, if I recall, to create an RFP. We don't have anything out there. We haven't got a consultant. We haven't got anything. And I think, too, with these groups, that we're talking about two separate things that really, as a board, in the simplistic fashion, we all need to play in each other's sandbox here and work together. So Justice definitely has to work with facilities no matter what. And I think that's kind of a given. Now, maybe I'm thinking about it a little too simple here, but I think if you are the head of these committees, that you would want to work together without being told to do so as part of your obligation of being the chair of those committees.
Okay. Does anybody else want to speak to this amendment? Everybody. Okay. I saw that, Al. Jan was next on the list.
Well, I agree with Mr. Quisenberry and Diane, and I think in the very beginning when we were all encouraged to do a jail tour, I think you kind of indicated you haven't been to the jail.
I've been to both jails.
You have? Okay.
Many times.
Okay.
In and out.
But I think that, okay, that's fine. I think, though, that in doing that, and I've been there three times, it's not only looking at the deterioration, the paint, and so forth, but you get a realization that these things do tie together. We have the people from that help provide some of the mental health services, and on the tour, it was really emphasized how difficult it is to do that with the layout that we have, not only the deteriorating, but just the layout. So I think they all do tie together, and it's important not only to look at the bricks and mortar, but also how we provide those services. So I think that it just naturally, the two ought to be working together, and I do see that happening.
Mr. Carter, you want to speak to the amendment?
This mine is kind of to death. It's, if I'm understanding you right, when we build the courthouse, we went to the taxpayer. We build a jail, we went to the taxpayer. We got money for the schoolhouse, we went to the taxpayer. Now, am I hearing you right that we already have the money somewhere here that we don't need their support this time?
We don't know, and we don't know the answer to that question. We won't know until we can get a cost assessment of what this project will actually cost in its entirety.
Now, do we have the $20 million to do this without asking the taxpayers for money?
There is some ability with the current quarter-cent public safety sales tax to assume additional debt to pay for this project, for example, in 2014, but we aren't at the point of making those decisions yet, but there is an ability for the current quarter-cent public safety sales tax to pay the repayment of debt on bonds for this project. But we don't know if it's enough. We won't know that till we get further along.
Well, I feel that the taxpayers is my ball. That's what put me up here, is the taxpayers. And I think they're looking out for me to show them a little courtesy. Now, in the past, we've done that. And now, we've been sitting up here all of this time trying to figure out what committee should do what. We build a courthouse over there with less controversy we have on trying to get a repairment of a house downtown. But, dude, something come on. There's something wrong here. And only because we not want to follow rules. That's all it's about. If we follow rules, we wouldn't have to sit up here wasting all this time for nothing. And the rules tell everybody up here you should know what you're supposed to do. It's plain and simple. Now, your rule book out of all of this haven't come up one time. Nobody brought the rule book up here. You read it to the people, let them know what procedure that you should take, what the chair should take, and everybody else sitting in this chamber should think. We sitting up here trying to legislate it out of our black pockets and not coming up with no real answers to nothing. Thank you.
Does anybody else have any more comments on Carol Ammon's amendment? Ms. Holderfield?
Could you repeat that amendment?
Ms. Busey?
Ms. Ammons, feel free to correct if this isn't correct. But it is to amend D1, which is the motion on the floor, to include a provision that any recommendations made by facilities include a provision to take advice from the Justice, am I getting it right, from the Justice and Social Services Citizens Advisory Committee /Task Force.
70.
Just a little bit of clarification, please. According to, Deb, what you had stated earlier on how the process was already or is being put in place, so having the advisory committee and having the other task force committee by the department heads, then with that RFP, we have a request. Mr. Sheriff, also if you wouldn't mind addressing, we have in this that we're putting together the opportunity to have a consultant brought in that will take both of the ideas and consult with both of the advisory teams, correct? Is that, in essence, what's going to be taking place here?
Well, the RFP is currently being written, and you haven't created a Citizens Advisory Committee yet. But the consultant should take into consideration information from all avenues, any that are available, which would include a Citizens Advisory Committee if one has been established by the time the consultant is brought on board. And that is at your direction, I think.
Okay, so with this recommendation by Carol, we are going to then vote on the authority, basically, of the task force advisory. Is that correct? Am I not understanding what that motion was, the amendment, Carol?
The goal of the provision, first of all, I want to I appreciate your question, because one of the things I've seen in almost my fourth year here is that if we have committees that run strictly outside of public participation, it's always going to be a problem, because on the committee, there's no public involvement. So that's a problem. So you create a citizens advisory committee, and I think, as Mr. Rosales pointed out very clearly, that if you don't put teeth in it to connect it to the importance of the work that the board will ultimately have to make a decision on, then you will, in essence, have some disconnect between your recommendations from your staff, your Justice and Social Services Committee, of your subcommittee of this board. And so my request was to put a provision that would make it, we are a legislative body, so make a legislative provision in these two committees that there has to be some liaison work between the two committees, and they must be connected so that when we get a recommendation as a board, that we get a complete recommendation. I respect Ms. Busey's description of how the RFP has to be done because the committee is not in place yet. But as the planning team goes forward from this point on, and once this board approves, once the chair of justice approves and gets the recommendations from the community as to who's willing to serve on this, then those committees would then naturally begin to work and collaborate together, not out of if we get a chance to, but by the command of. To get there.
Okay, next we have Mr. Langenhagen.
Can we presume that the Facilities Committee will be free to ignore the advice of the Justice Committee?
Mr. Benz? Mr. Langenhagen said, can we presume that the Facilities Committee will feel free to ignore the advice?
Can we be free to ignore the advice of the Justice Committee?
The Facilities Committee is in this room right now. So you can ignore it or not ignore it. You can pay it or not pay it. We're the Facilities Committee, which has got a different name tonight. In terms of the...
I'm not talking about tonight. I'm talking about down the way.
Well, in terms of the committee that Facilities is dealing with in terms of the assessment, I can't imagine simply ignoring any input, whether it's from the board, whether it's from this committee from justice. I think they're fairly parallel in some respects. I think the people who you're going to hire to do the assessment are inherently going to consider all of the issues that we're talking about. I mean, they're going to look at how effective your various programs are, how it will reduce or increase the size of the jail population, all of those things. When you hire a planner and an assessor, that's what they look at. So if we have another committee doing that, I can't imagine them saying, well, that's another committee, so we're not going to pay attention. I would go crazy if that was happening. I can't imagine anyone tolerating that. Could they ignore it? Theoretically, I would hope that they wouldn't. I can't imagine it happening.
So it should fall for ignore.
Okay.
Well, and the point of this original motion is to open this up and hopefully bring in some people who are experts, who in various ways, who know more on different things than we do, and hopefully bring in some good advice on what we should do, open this up. If it does its job, Hopefully everybody will be pleased to follow the advice. Next, okay, we have Mr. Langenheim. Mr. Alex, you are next on the amendment.
Just to speak to the amendment, I appreciate the spirit behind the amendment, which is saying that if we have this committee, we want their input to be taken into account by the jail space problem team, whatever we're calling that, the group that's looking at the problem with the downtown jail that we formed last week. What is the official name of that group?
Space Improvement. Jail
it's Jail Space Improvement. Planning team. Thank you. And their intent is that whatever this Citizens Advisory Committee comes up with, and I think it could be work in progress, too. I don't think Mr. Quisenberry had the concern that does this mean that this group has to wrap up before the group that's taking their input could take their input. I think the answer is no. I mean, I think you just basically say, you know, whatever these guys have available at the time that the other team, the consultant who's doing the RFP or the other team is doing their evaluation, they have to take this into account. I will say, though, I think the right way to do that is to amend the charter of the jail space improvement team to say that they have to take into account the recommendations of this committee, not the other way around, because it's the jail space committee that you're trying to find, not the Citizens Advisory Committee. So I guess I would say I'd probably vote against this amendment, but ask that somebody bring a motion in the Facilities Committee to provide a conduit for that input to be accepted into the jail space improvement project.
Ms. Bergson, you haven't spoken yet. Do you have anything on that you would like to say on this amendment?
Could we, in the RFP for this jail committee, require that they consult with our Citizens Committee?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. Absolutely. Mr. Quisenberry.
In fact, that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to vote against this amendment because I think it's clunky and a little bit backwards, as Mr. Alex describes. But then rather than try to put a limit on staff on what they're working on, I will work to make sure that consultation is part of the RFP that actually solicits the consultant that's going to take information and do something with it. So I'm going to vote against the amendment, but work for the goal in that fashion.
Does anybody else want to speak to Carol's amendment? Ms. Petrie.
Well, this is probably stretching it dead on the amendment, but I do need to ask this question so I know how to vote. And the question is to Ms. Busey in relationship to this RFP. There are parallel consultants out in the great world of consultants who do the work of the social criminal justice side in a needs assessment. Is there a possibility of hiring such a parallel consultant and or seeing to it that in the RFP for this needs assessment that such parallel language gets into this RFP?
That's not what the direction was from the Facilities Committee last week, and that's not what's being written, but the scope of work ultimately is up to the county board, and I would be happy for the sheriff to weigh in since his staff is working on this RFP.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Two things. Ms. Busey summed up what we've been working on with the RFP very well. The only thing I will add, I have suggested language in it because I do want the professional early on to talk about things like the mental health, the medical needs, and some specific issues I believe that are growing that need to be dealt with in a jail. However you folks want the RFP, it can be drafted. We can do two RFPs. I've said this, and Mr. Alex did a good job, and so did Mr. Betts. As we talk about this, please keep in mind one thing. The sheriff runs the operation of the jail. The jail is a very specific building. It's designed to do certain things, much like a hospital ER. I mean, it has a very specific use, and its design is based upon its use. I understand what the professor is saying. There needs to be interplay, but what I'm afraid is going to happen and what I've seen in the last 3 weeks, we have a deteriorating downtown facility that doesn't meet our needs. It's going to take years to replace. The only thing I can do is run it. Quite quite frankly, and I don't mean to be rude and some of you get mad at me, really the only thing you can control is do we build a new one? How do we build it? That type of thing. These other things we need to address, I agree, but I'm very afraid that we are going to get bogged down with a lot of other issues where this is going to sit for another year or two and things are getting worse. But in answer to your question, we can have two RFPs. We can stick it in this RFP. You'll have to give me some guidance if that's what you want to do. You've got more expertise in this area than I do. You'll have to give me guidance what you wanted and if we're going to do one. But we're still in the drafting stage. I hope that answers.
Okay, we're ready to vote on this amendment. Okay. All in favor of Carol's amendment, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed?
Aye.
Aye. The amendment fails. We are back to the main motion with the amendment by Weibel. Anybody else like to speak to the main motion? The main motion is the establishment of the committee. Does anybody... establishment of a citizens advisory committee. Mr. Allen.
Sorry, I realize the hour's getting late, and I don't want to saddle the committee with yet another amendment. But I do take exception to this implementing suggestions in the jailing communities report. I mean, that's an extremely narrow charter, and I would hope that that would essentially be not part of the charter of this commission. I mean, I think we should certainly look at the jailing communities report among many other sources of information, but I think to suggest that this is just a committee that is looking at the jailing communities report is doing it a disservice.
Well, we're certainly looking to make it much broader, and one of the reasons I didn't want detailed specifics on what we were doing was to not limit what we might end up wanting to do. But feel free to make an amendment to strike that from it.
But no, that you understand that the goal is to make it broader than that.
Yes.
I'll take your assurance. Thank you.
Would anybody else like to speak to the motion? Okay. Except Mr. Carter.
Yeah. You know, I thought you already had that authority to select your committee. So why we have to vote on selecting your committee? You have that authority. So I don't get this at all. I don't. You have the authority to select your committee to perform for you. You are the chair. Now,
I do if you vote yes.
Huh?
I do if enough of you vote yes. Ms. Holderfield.
I move to call the question.
Second.
To call the question, we have second. Do you guys actually want the question called, or do you just want to? Okay. All those in favor of calling the question?
Aye.
All those opposed? That's definitely two-thirds. The question, the previous question has been called. Debate's been ended. Let's do a roll call on this. And I guess we will vote.
Carter.
This is to create the committee. This is to create the committee.
Well, if it'll help you, brother, yes.
Coward.
Thank you, Mr. Carter.
Yes.
Esri.
Yes.
Holderfield.
Yes.
James.
Yes.
Jay.
Yes.
Kurtz.
Yes.
Langenheim.
Yes.
Mac, Michaels.
Yes.
Mosier. Nope. O'Connor.
Yes.
Petrie.
Yes.
Quisenberry.
Yes.
Rosales.
I will have to vote no, not as is. I cannot accept it this way. So my answer is no.
Schrader.
Yes.
Weibel.
Yes.
Alex.
Yes.
Ammons.
Yes.
Anderson.
Yes.
Berkson. Betts. Richards.
Yes.
I was not.
McGinty.
Yes.
Richards.
Okay. Yes. The motion passes. That is it for other business. For Chair's report, just let me briefly do a report on the now other Committee for Justice and Social Services, the Jury Commission. The first in the new public service blocks started Saturday. Aaron Ammons and I believe Barbara Kessel were on the radio talking on Saturday, trying to spread the word to the community to participate in juries. In addition, the committee is looking at public service announcements inside of MTD buses. If they're inside, we can do that and do public service announcements for serving on juries with no expense to this county board. As far as designation of items for consent, C1 passed unanimously. D1 will not need to come back up. And that is it for Justice and Social Services.
Next up is policy personnel appointments. Ms. Ammons.
We move for about a 5-minute recess and come back to the board.
I think that's fine.
All right. Do we have a quorum? We don't even have a quorum. Where's everybody at? Okay. All right. I'm counting the share. Let's do it. All right. We call policy personnel and appointments back into session. Item 1, resignation of. Are we doing that? That's provided for information, CUMTD resignation. Unless the board members have something they want to discuss on this issue, I'm just going to skip that item. Nothing. Okay, thank you. Item 2 was removed at the beginning of the agenda. Mr. Rosales, you guys, Mr. Schroeder, what, y'all having a good time back there. Item 3A3, resignation of Robert Reese from Mount Olive Cemetery Association, also provided for information only. If you have anything you'd like to point our attention to on that issue, we can do it at this time. Seeing none, we'll move to item A4, appointment of Jack Knott to the Mount Olive Cemetery Association to fill an unexpired term ending 6/30/2014. Mr. Weibel, your nomination for that?
Madam Chair, my nomination is Jack Knott. I'd ask for an omnibus motion to include at number 5-2, appointment of James Prather to the same cemetery association for the term ending June 3rd, 2017.
Second.
It's been moved and second for omnibus motion for 4 and 5. Any discussion on those two appointments, as Mr. Weibel has indicated? Seeing none, all in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Seeing none, that motion, those both motions carry. Item 6, resignation of County Board members Alan Noodle and Brad Jones. I believe those are for information as well for the board members. We'll move to item 7.
7 and 8, please, ma'am.
7, 8 will be done at the County Board. Is that correct, Mr. Weibel?
Correct, but we can do a motion here.
So we don't, can we do it in committee? Is that what you said?
No, we can.
Do it at the board, correct?
Normal point.
So moved.
All right.
Second.
Aye.
Aye. I'm not sure what we're moving and said. We don't need to do that, right?
Actually, it's only the chair. Yeah, that's correct. So I move that we appoint Jeff Kibler and Max Mitchell to fill unexpired terms of Mr. Drew and Mr. Jones, respectively, District 3.
Second.
Second by Mr. Quisenberry. Thank you. All in favor of those two appointments?
Aye.
Any opposition? Seeing none, those appointments carry.
Madam Chair, can I have the next 4 as an omnibus also?
Yes, sir.
So I'd like to appoint Ron Benzel, the Nursing Home Board of Directors, to fill an unexpired term. With Ellen Noodle, appointment of Diane Michaels to Lincoln Exhibits Committee to fill the unexpired term of Ellen Noodle. Appointment of John Jay to Labor Committee to fill the unexpired term of Ellen Noodle. And appointment of Astrid Brixton to the Veterans Assistance Commission Committee to replace Carol Evans.
So moved. Second.
I'm sorry, Mr. Weibel makes the motion and
Carter.
Mr. Carter seconds it. Thank you. Any discussion on those appointments? Seeing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Any opposition? Those motions carry. Thank you. B1, Regional Planning Commission requests approval of RPC revised purchasing policy.
So moved.
Second.
Moved by Mr. Quisenberry, second by Mr. Kurtz. Any discussion on this revised? I'll just for clarity's sake, I know Ms. Busey has an explanation as to why we're doing this at this point. She can share it with the board members before voting.
This is just to make the same changes to the Regional Planning Commission purchasing policy that the county board made to its own purchasing policy 2 months ago.
Any questions on this that you have at this point? Seeing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Any opposition? The motion carries. Thank you. Item C1, Strategic Planning Committee, recommendation for approval of Champaign County Strategic Planning
strategic plan. I know Aaron kills me with that strategic plan 2012 update.
So moved.
Moved by Mr. James, seconded by Ms. Holderfield. Mr. Alex.
I noted in the packet that the changes that are proposed to the plan were listed, but that the board member comments were not. Is there a plan to promulgate those to the full board, or did that happen and I just missed them?
I think the board member comments were not actually put forward unless recommended, just the recommendations from the committee. Is that right, Mr. McGinty?
Beats me. I forget.
Okay.
I do.
You guys remember. Okay.
I thought that we were going to include all the comments to all the board members. Can we send them out?
Provide them. Yeah.
Can you send them to me?
Electronically.
Send them to everyone if they want them.
Everybody else may not want them, but I want them.
No, I missed that, I guess. The strategic plan is included in the packet. But we have the listing of all of the ideas and initiatives, and they have been, rated.
Would it be possible to get that in hard copy?
Yes.
Thank you.
Mr. McGinty, and then whose hand did I see on my right here? Nobody? Okay, thank you.
So very briefly, the committee's met quite a few times. Only a couple of other board members have attended. Ms. Petrie in particular has attended, I think, most of them. We took all the comments, especially when we came to the caucuses and asked for comments on the fly, and so that everybody had a chance to provide input as to updates to this plan. There's been a lot of good discussion. We rated everything. The results of this are the top-rated items that came out of this plan. Very similar process to what we did a couple years ago, but not exactly the same. And so this is the result of these updates. We hope to do this every couple years and think that that's a reasonable time frame around which to get updates. The goal here is for all of the departments to be able to use this plan to shape their budgets, that every change request really should line up with a strategic planning objective, pretty standard strategic planning. So I'm pretty satisfied with this process and the inclusion of all comments, ratings, discussions about those at our committee level.
Ms. Petrie.
May I be allowed to ask Mr. Alex an information question?
Yes, please.
Okay, thank you. Is the purpose of your wanting to see all of the comments so that you have some time to digest them in case you want to make any suggested changes?
No, I trust that the Strategic Planning Committee made the right decision. I'm just curious what things came up that weren't considered or that didn't make it into the final report.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Any other questions about or comments or anything in relationship to the recommendation for approval for the strategic plan 2012? Seeing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Any opposition? Thank you. That motion carries. County Administrator.
The vacant positions listing is in your packet for your information. And then on the addendum, we are presenting a request for approval of a release of RFP 2012-002 to purchase Champaign County Sheriff's Office prisoner transport bus. This bus has been scheduled for replacement since at least 2010, and it's finally reached a point where it absolutely does need to be replaced. So we would ask your approval to release that RFP.
So moved.
All right, it's been moved and seconded. Mr. Jay, and who's second? Mr. Esri. Thank you. Any discussion on that recommendation, Mr. Langenheim, Mr. Esri, after that?
Is that bus still running?
Yes. Barely.
Enough said. Mr. Esri.
Just a quick question, noticing in what would I assume would be the RFP is presented under mirrors. It says OEM Ford, and yet I recognize throughout the rest of it, it doesn't mention a specific brand. I'm going to assume more than likely it would probably end up being a Ford, but I don't know if you want to take out the Ford in that one spot.
Yeah, I'm sorry. We missed it. We tried to take out any specific manufacturer references.
I figured as such, and it was just slight oversight. No problem. Thanks.
Thank you. Any other questions on Ms. Petrie?
Thank you. Yes, could we just have a bit of explanation on the plans for paying for this, and is it in the budget already?
Yes, it is. It's in the Sheriff's Correctional Center Capital Asset Replacement Fund budget. The funds have been there for over 2 years waiting for the bus to finally die.
Any other questions? Seeing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Any opposition? That motion carries. Item E is County Clerk Monthly Report, January 2012. I don't see.
The move will be received and placed in file.
Second. Moved by Mr. Betts, second by Mr. Quisenberry. Any discussion, any questions? Seeing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Any opposition? Thank you. That motion carries. Item F, other business, proposal for local food council. I'm going to defer to Ms. Petrie, who asked for this item and has prepared a document for all the board members on the desk today to open up this discussion. I'm sorry. Thank you. Move approval by Mr. McGinty. Second by Mr. Quisenberry. Now I will turn it over to Ms.
Petrie. Thank you very much. You heard several people speak in support of this council at the beginning of our long evening. I also have asked Ms. Busey, and she has provided a hard copy for the record of comments that were sent to me by email by individuals who are not able to come to the meeting, and they are all in support, as is a comment from Deb Frank Finan, who is at the Champaign City Council meeting as we are here this evening. And as an individual who serves on the Champaign City Council, she also is in support of the county board accepting this idea to set up this local food policy council. And I have two other comments sent to me in respect for the lateness of the hour. I will get them into the public record, but announce that Hal Barnhart sent me an email message containing support and reminding us that this idea for this type of council came up in Big Small All, and it's also in the LRMP Volume 2, 4.8. And Norm Stenzel also sent me an email message, and I will see to it that it's in the record, and he highly encourages the county board to support this idea of establishing a council. And at this point in time, this council is to no cost for the county. In addition, you have copies of a bit of the information that is provided by the edible economy that shows the return rate in economic development to the counties who have started putting a very strong focus on local foods, the production of them, the encouragement of them, getting them institutionalized into the various end users within a county, food hubs, everything that many of the people who spoke to you earlier today brought to your attention. So the bottom line is this is a win-win situation all the way around for the farmer, for the community, for the county and economic development. And I do encourage my fellow board members to support this.
Thank you. Mr. McGinty.
I'm for this. I had discussions with quite a few folks about this a year and a half ago maybe, and it seems like a reasonable thing to do, and I like the cost.
Mr. Weibel.
I support this too, but I have a question for Ms. Petrie on the structure of the council. Second question. Two members will be chosen from communities within the county. Communities, you know, either is subjective or like the rural community or objective like the community of a village. So I'd like some clarification what you mean by the term communities here. Do you mean municipalities or something else?
I was trying to write that, Chair Weibel, in such a way that...
Excuse me, you succeeded.
It's time for us to adjourn, right? I'm getting a hard time. I wanted it written so that... when you make your decisions as to who you choose to bring forward to the county board, that you have a breadth, that you could choose them from the municipalities, or you could choose them from some of the rural communities, and that would allow you the chance to have some cross-fertilization of both rural and urban.
Okay.
Mr. Langenheim was next, and then Mr. James, I see you.
Does anyone have any idea how much this might cost us?
At this point, there's no proposal for any cost associated with it at all, that it would be a council basically working in collaboration with the other communities. So there's no cost associated with it at this point.
No cost?
Zero cost. Mr. James.
I just wanted to say thank you, Patsy, for not including my comments I sent you.
Mr. Esri.
I guess I just had a question, maybe of Ms. Petrie. Is there anything keeping such a board from being assembled on their own without county government intervention? Kind of seems to me like it's another layer of government, even if it doesn't cost us anything. I don't see why this group of people can't form such a board and conduct business, come present ideas to this county board, and do it all on their own. The Farm Bureau was started without government intervention. It was started by farmers getting together, put a group together. A lot of other co-ops and so on have been done. I don't see why, I guess, I'm not saying this is a bad idea, but why does the county need to be involved with it? Thanks.
Ms. Petrie, if you wanted to answer that before I go to Mr. Schroeder.
I think some of the key ingredients why counties around the country have done this on a county level, and that is because it puts it on a macro level where they can look at the broad breadth of ideas. There are many entities that already exist that do certain slices along the way on the issue of local foods, but none of them can do it in the broad breadth way, and that's the point of setting it up on the county level.
Mr. Schroeder.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Let me preface my remarks first by saying I'm not against small growers. I am not against local food. I fully support it. 60 years, 70 years ago, this was an agrarian society out here. You had barns, you had cribs, some silos out here lining the area out here. And that's all done away with. But obviously there's a lot of interest. And if you go to other states like Wisconsin, if you even go down to the Amish community down in Arthur, there's a population down there that grows the food, it's local, and it's done so from a free market standpoint. Mr. Ayers was here, the extension educator. And as we know, the extension here in the county gets about a little over $400,000 a year from taxpayers to do things like this. I'm not opposed to this council, but I think there's already a mechanism there. And I talked to Mr. Ayers through another individual who had the same questions I did. And there's nothing in this council that the extension isn't already up and going that can do something like this. For years, the extension has been involved in not only growing the stuff, but also putting it out there and preparing it, all the way through preparing it. And I think that's key, too. And that's probably something the council will take up. But it's almost like we're reinventing the wheel here, because for decades, the University of Illinois Extension has been doing this. And the word alone, extension of the University of Illinois, and I'm not going to pick on you, Ms. Petrie, but every issue that we bring in here, we go back to the experts at the University of Illinois, and we have that with the extension. We have professionals staffed with the extension that have exclusive connectivity right into the university with all the professors and all the knowledge there. So my point is, why are we creating this council from this organization when we can do it, and the need is there, I think. We can do it with the extension. The extension already gets taxpayer money to do this, and they are professionals at doing this. I think we can do this. My brother is one of those. He's 100 miles away, but when Papa Georgia had a place up here, he provided all the mutton up here. So I'm all for that. I've known the Moores, well, Diane Storger Moore, since she was a kid. I grew up around her. Her parents still live in Sedoris. The Moores are well known down here at Lincoln Square at the food market down here. They've been here since the inception, bringing down fresh meat and fresh produce and everything. I'm all for it. In fact, I just got an email about an hour ago from Farm Progress. I get it every week. And the state of Missouri is providing funds to create high towers, to buy high towers. You can buy them and send the state money or send the state to build. They'll reimburse you. Or you can get a grant and you can buy these high towers. Now, these high towers will allow you to grow fruits, herbs, and vegetables, not so much fruits, but vegetables and herbs during the winter months. They're great things, but they're not cheap. But obviously, there's a great need for this. But my point is, once again, I hate to belabor my point, we already have a mechanism. We have a conduit with a professional staff at the extension right into the experts at the university, and they have other avenues into other universities within the Big Ten system, the land-grant colleges. So, once again, I'm not opposed to this. I'm going to vote against it. I think there's a better way, and I think that's through extension.
Well, before I take other comments on this, let me just make a recommendation, because certainly we are not in any time frame. We can get some of those things addressed from the extension. He was here. We really could have asked him that question. I would recommend that two things happen at this point, that A, we can certainly bring this back on to the Committee of the Whole agenda, giving us time to address some of these issues, and B, that we formulate your recommendation into an actual resolution so that we can vote on it as a resolution from the county level. At this point, we could not vote on it. It's just a recommendation. It's just a draft. Yeah,
Madam Chair, I'd like to make a motion to defer to next month.
It's been moved and seconded for deferment until the next Committee of the Whole policy. Correct? Yes. Any discussion on a motion to defer? Seeing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Any opposition? It's been deferred to the Committee of the Whole. Thank you. We don't have a chair's report designation of consent. Items number 4, 5, 7, 8, 10, 11, 12, B1, C1, and I believe that's all. That'll be all. I move adjournment.
Go ahead, Ms. Allen.
I move adjournment. It's been seconded. Thank you.